Okay, we'll call the Healthcare and Human Services Finance Committee to order. If members in the audience can quiet down so we can get started with our agenda today. There's a lot on the table with a limited amount of time. With the meeting called to order and with the quorum being present, we'll just start off with the approval of the minutes from March 13th. From March 17th, I suppose. So they have the minutes from March 17th, and Representative Thiessen moves for the approval of the minutes.
So moved.
Any discussion? None being so, all those in favor signify by aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The minutes are adopted. We'll move on to House File 3976. Representative Huntley.
Mr. Chair, I would like to move that 3976 be recommended to pass and referred to the Finance Committee. And, Mr. Chair, then I would move the DE2 amendment, which is a delete all.
Okay. Representative Huntley moves the DE2 amendment to House File 3976 to get the bill in order as the author wishes. Any discussion on the motion? None being so, all those in favor signify by aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The amendment is adopted. Representative Huntley, I believe you have an A12 amendment you would like to adopt. A technical amendment?
Oh. Which thing? I would move the A12 amendment.
Representative Huntley moves the A12 amendment.
This just deletes some sections of the bill that I don't want in there.
They don't.
Any questions to the A12 amendment? Representative Barrado.
Mr. Chairman, we're not quite finding it yet, but while we're all finding it, I'm wondering if, for the purposes of just making sure that we're all on the same page in this room, that Representative Huntley could just very briefly go over the changes between the bill and the DE2 amendment, just so I'm not sure if the audience has had a chance to take a look at the amendment. I know that we had an opportunity to do that, but maybe just some of the big substantive changes so that everybody's all on the same page.
But Representative Broad, we will definitely be allowing the author to do that. I'd just like to make sure that we move the amendment to get it in the form the author would wish. And then we'll also have a limited amount of time for testimony at the same time after the author describes his bill. So. Any further discussions on the A12 amendment? None being so, all those in favor signify by aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The amendment is adopted. Representative Huntley to the bill.
Well, Mr. Chair and members, this is the finance bill for Healthcare and Human Services. As you know, this is not a budget year, and usually what's done in the non-budget year is to make a bill that changes laws. We have to change because of federal changes in their laws. But this year is a little unusual in that the state is in a fiscal crisis, and we have to balance the budget, which means we have to make cuts. And the target that this committee was given by the speaker is about $131 million in cuts. And so that is a very tough thing to do. Everything in this bill or under the jurisdiction of this committee either provides health care or provides services to people that are in desperate need, either people in nursing homes, people in long-term care, and just providing health insurance to people that don't get it where they work. The bill as it is now, and we'll walk through the spreadsheet in a minute, protects most of the expansion we did last year in Minnesota Care. Some of you may remember that we had a bill to cover all kids, and we didn't get everything we wanted, but we did, in the bill we ended up with, provide health insurance in the out years for about half the children that don't have coverage. What we've done in this bill as it is now is to protect almost all of those expansions of Minnesota Care. The governor recommended many cuts, and in fact, I have the sheet here, here it is. The governor's proposal would have prevented about 31,500 people from getting health insurance. What this bill does is protect almost all of those, so the good things we did last year are protected. Also, in this bill, we are not, we're holding nursing homes and long-term care harmless. We're not cutting what we did for them last year, which was not enough last year, but at least we gave what the governor would allow us to give in the final bill. We had pushed much higher amounts for nursing homes prior to the governor dictating what we could give. So in this bill, again, we have protected nursing homes and long-term care facilities from any cuts from what we did last year. And I think I'll start through the spreadsheet. I think everybody's got a copy. And we go through the items. They start actually on page 2. And the first... 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 items. That's through lines 122. Are simply changes that we had to make with our laws to match up what the federal requirements were. So if you look at the governor's budget recommendations and what's in this bill right now, which is called the House, those first five items are identical, so we did not make any changes to those, and they refer to federal law changes. The first change in this bill from what the governor recommended is starts on line 132, and we are removing the family cap, which is it says that if a woman's on welfare and has another child, she doesn't get any extra payment for that new child, and what this bill says that will no longer be the case. We'll remove that cap, and if they get pregnant and have a child, they will get an increased cash subsidy. That was not in the governor's proposal. We have a on line 137. This is a department bill, came after the governor's recommendation, I guess, but it's a TANF maintenance of effort programs modified, and this is, I think, in a Mr. Walls, no, Mr. Walls, is this the one that is also in another bill and allows us to hopefully capture some back money? Mr. Walls?
Mr. Chair, yes, this was a bill that passed out of committee early in session and allows the state to lower its maintenance of effort from 80% to 75% by meeting the work requirements.
Okay, and well then, Mr. Chair, what this section does is the department did want this. The governor had put his finance bill together in a slightly different way, so but this is a department issue, and as you know, we are in danger of being sanctioned because we did not have the proper maintenance of effort with our TANF family. And this is a way to redo that, and hopefully, if this passes, allow the state to try to go back and get some payments that they had to make back in 07. So this one is not controversial. The next page, page three, is a MFIP work bonus and food support simplification. We passed the bill that we wanted to do something, and federal laws put a penalty in place, so this changes that, makes it okay for us to do, and the House bill is the same as the governor's on this. The next difference from the governor is on line 155, and that's a dental care access study. That is a bill from Representative Solberg, and that was not in the governor's proposal. It's $100,000. If you go down to line 166, governor's proposal and this proposal are the same. If you go to line 171, this is the American Indian youth treatment for addicted kids, either to alcohol or drugs, that is being proposed in the city of Bemidji. And this is the one that was originally in the bonding bill, and it turns out that we can't bond for that, so what we're trying to do is help them purchase the existing facility. And again, that was in the governor's bill as well. The next, line 176, is the governor's administrative budget reduction that he's sending down to all his departments, and we are the same as the governor in that one. Line 182 is an account elimination. It's something that the department does not need anymore, and this just transfers the money. It's the same in the governor's bill as in this bill. The next one on line 189 is a chemical dependency treatment fund transfer, and this fund has an excess amount of money over what the department thinks it needs, and so we're transferring some of that money using it as a cut. And again, it's the same, the governor is the same as the bill before us today. Line 196 is past due county receivables, and this is the same in the governor's bill and this bill. The governor on line 201, last year, in last year's budget, there were four counties that were exempted from a penalty that the governor wished to put on those four counties because they'd overspent on their MRRC waivers, I think it was. And we forgave four of the counties from having to pay that back, and the governor doesn't like that, and I sort of understand why. But he wanted to go after them and get the money, and in our proposal, are not doing that. The next one, 206, both the governor's bill and this bill are the same, and that's an adoption assistance relative custody item. And the next one on the next page, I think I'll have John Walls describe the MFIP transfers on lines 213 through 222.
Mr. Walls. Mr. Chair and members, in order to meet the general fund target, the proposal includes refinancing of $34.25 million of TANF money using the Working Family Credit as a mechanism to swap in TANF dollars and pull out previously appropriated general fund expenditures of $17.125 million per year in 08 and 09.
And Mr. Walls, and Mr. Chair, and Mr. Walls, that is a smaller amount than the governor has suggested.
Mr. Chair, that's correct. The governor refinanced $91.5 million, and this proposal is for $34.25 million. The governor also refinances an additional $14.7 million in the 10 and 11 biennium. This proposal does not include any further refinancing.
Okay, the next item is on line 225, and there, in the governor's bill, there was a proposal to basically transfer a number of people from GAMC onto Minnesota Care very rapidly instead of the current 3 months delay. That would have been a significant hit to the health care access fund, and this bill does not have that item in it. So that money will stay in the health care access fund. The next item is a refinance of critical access dental. This is a transfer from the general fund into the healthcare access fund, and it's my belief that the healthcare access fund was intended to do just what this does, which is provide people with dental care that don't have dental insurance. The next item is the HIV grant funding, and there's just some rearranging how that's done. Both the governor and this bill are the same. The next one is methamphetamine funding. That is a facility in Wilmer that has no executive director and no staff, and so we're taking that, and that is somewhat controversial, but the money is going to the bottom line. County grant payment delay is the next one, and both this is sticking it to the counties with a delay in their payment, and that's in this bill and the governor's bill as well. And the next item is one of the more painful ones. There'll be people in the audience that this one, and there's two others that really hit hospitals. And if there's anything I really hated to do was put the burden on hospitals. But since most of my budget is long-term care and nursing homes, if you don't cut those, somebody else is going to get cut. And the one on line 259 is a delay in payments of 1 month, I believe, and saves the money in, from one biennium to the next. The next item, 267, is an increase in the managed healthcare programs. Currently, we take 5% out, and then it's paid back to them if they meet their criteria for excellence and quality and so on. And what this does is increase that 5% to 7%, I believe. And it's the same in the governor's bill as in this bill. The next one is another painful one, and I'm sure the hospitals will come down and testify. It delays the hospital inpatient rebasing again. It seems like they can come and tell us how many years it's been since they got rebased. But that is $9 million hit this year and $30 in the next biennium. And Mr. Walls, what is 282 and 283?
Mr. Chair, lines 282 and 283 are just tied to the delay of inpatient hospital rebasing on the previous page.
Okay. So that's the one then that we... Okay. So that's due to the hospital rebasing, and it results in a is that a surplus in the health care access fund?
Mr. Wall.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, there was an interaction with the governor's previous proposal that was previously mentioned in this spreadsheet, and that is on line 225, refinance transitional GAMC to the Healthcare Access Fund. Since the bill did not pick up that proposal, there was an interaction with the two proposals in the governor's bill, but there was an interaction that we did not have since we did not include that refinancing of transitional GAMC. That is why the governor's numbers are slightly different on hospital rebasing than they are for the House.
Okay. And the next item, Mr. Chair, is an increase in nursing facility payment rate and eliminate rebasing. The governor proposed to do this, cut to nursing homes. We are not doing that. The next one is the long-term care COLA. The governor recommended delaying that, and we are not going to do that in this bill. The next item, the governor wanted to reduce the fee-for-service pharmacy rates. We propose not to do that. The next item is the pre-substance abuse treatment rates. Again, the governor and this bill are the same currently. And the next one is the one that was most painful to me. And relates to the disproportionate share payments that hospitals get and how that's distributed around the state. And if I'll be doing anything for the next 4 weeks, it's try to fix this particular problem. But it's a big hit to hospitals, and it's particularly a big hit to Hennepin County Hospital, Regents Hospital, and the two hospitals in Duluth. Next item is the same in both the governor's bill and this bill, and it is a freeze on waivered services, so we're not taking any additional people into this program, so there are people that will not get services they thought they were going to get. Next item is to eliminate the Transitional Medical Assistance for Children program. Again, this protects healthcare access fund money, and the governor wished to make those cuts. We're not going to do that, so that's part of those 20,000 kids that will not lose insurance or not lose the opportunity to have insurance. Eliminate funding for healthcare outreach incentive program. Again, the governor wanted to do that. The program itself doesn't cost much money, but it brings a lot of people into Minnesota Care and also into medical assistance. And we intend to keep what we promised to do last year, which was to increase the number of people on medical assistance and in Minnesota Care. And the next one is 358. Current law says that the poverty line for adults without children should go from 200 to 215. And this says the governor wished to keep it at 200 where it is now, and this says it will go up to 215. Let's see. Oh, the managed home and community-based waiver growth. This is a number of waivers, and we've done the same in this bill as the governor proposed. And again, this is a cap on some of these waivers. So people that thought they were going to get services in last year's bill, well, because we're going to cap the enrollment in those programs. And the governor also proposed that we eliminate some community-based demonstration project grants, and this bill does not include that cut. And I think that's sort of a summary of what we've done. And if we now want to have
testimony from
people. Thank you, Representative Huntley. With the amount of amendments and the limited amount of time that we have, we will reserve 20 minutes for testimony in regards to the proposed budget in front of us. We have had one person, I believe, request to testify. Ms. Spector?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Carol Spector, and I'm the Advocacy and Legislative Affairs Director for Children's Defense in Minnesota. If I'm the only one, don't worry, I don't have 20 minutes of testimony.
There'll be others, I'm sure.
I just wanted to be prepared. So I would like to once again thank this committee for its leadership in ensuring children have health care coverage. Representative Huntley mentioned the CoverAll Kids bill last year, and it's a great leadership in terms for this committee to not eliminate the gains that were made last year, and I thank you for that. We think the number of children who will now have access to health care coverage because this funding will continue is close to 30,000, 20,000 through the transitional MA, and thousands more, up to 10,000 for the outreach. And this is an investment that will pay off manyfold over the long term for Minnesota. Investing in children's health, ensuring children have health care coverage is, as studies show, the first step to healthy children, and this will pay off for the state of Minnesota and for the healthcare system. And I also want to thank the committee for preserving the healthcare access fund, which will allow Minnesota to move forward and continue to cover Minnesotans and use that money for what it was intended for, to expand coverage. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Spector. As we continue to move forward, I'd like to try to keep testimony down to about a minute, since I'm sure with the size of the audience that there will be several people. But we have also Welfare Right is next. Welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record.
Hello, my name is Deb Knitschny, and I am a member of the Welfare Rights Committee. We're an organization of low-income families, current and former welfare recipients. This is a very disturbing day. It's obvious that in setting their targets, the leadership has once again targeted poor women and children. We are outraged that this bill goes along with Governor Pawlenty's moves to steal money from the TANF fund, money that is supposed to be spent on TANF families, poor mothers, poor children, and this money is being transferred out of TANF to balance a budget deficit. Poor families in this state and people from all walks of life have called on legislators here at this Capitol repeatedly to leave the TANF dollars alone, to leave the TANF dollars in TANF to be spent where it is intended to be spent, on poor families. Yet this bill spends over $30 million, steals over $30 million from TANF.
For the testifier,
dollars,
you don't need to use words like steal, but...
from TANF dollars, yet it spent less than $1.5 million of the TANF dollars to restore money to TANF families who were cut in 2003. And these are families that are living over 60% below the federal poverty level. This is shameful. It is criminal. It's important to tell the truth about welfare. Welfare uses up way less than 0.5% of the state budget. Yet once again, legislators are balancing the budget on the backs of poor families. Is there some kind of fear around here going on, fear-mongering, that we have to go along with bad ideas that the Governor Pawlenty proposes? Try being afraid of losing your housing. Try being afraid of not having food to put on your table to feed your hungry children. These are real fears. These are the real fears. Anything else is petty and trivial. So whatever you need to do, we urge you to do it, to not steal this money out of TANF. It is wrong. It is wrong. It is wrong. And the best thing to do is to spend the TANF dollars on TANF families.
Welcome to the committee, and since we've already had a testifier on this issue, if you can please limit your time to about 30 seconds as we have to move on to others.
Hi, my name is Tasha Jackson. Called the legislators and chairperson. I am very disappointed but not surprised about the governor's decision, and I'm going to be one of those individuals that's going to stand up and that's not going to back down, and we need to get the governor impeached because he's making it impossible for a whole lot of people and affecting a whole lot of people.
Focus your comments on the proposal in front of you.
That's what I'm focusing on.
Not the governor, but please focus on it.
Well,
thank you.
I'm just saying because he's making it very difficult for a whole lot of people besides poor people. And we need to get on the bandwagon and stand up and fight for what's right, bottom line.
Thank you, Ms. Jackson. Ms. Creepy.
I don't think that's for me. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Mary Trinke, and I'm with the Minnesota Hospital Association. I would just like to point out to the committee, I recognize that you all have very difficult decisions to make and that this is not easy decisions that you all are facing. Of the $130 million that is supposed to be cut in this bill, half of it is from hospitals. And as we spent much of the summer and fall talking about health care reform, the problem is government underpayments to providers, and it is very difficult to move forward with health care reform if government is going to continue to underpay providers, because we're trying to get rid of the cost shifting that is going on. And currently, hospitals are underpaid in our state Medicaid program by about $130 million. We're paid at our 2002 cost minus 11.5%. So I just, as you do your deliberations, I just want that number and that to stay with you. We're paid at 2002 costs minus 11.5%. I also would just like to point out the cost savings that you're showing on the rebasing, that has a federal matching dollar to it. So if there is any way possible, if there is additional money down the road, as we say, working on funding where there is a federal match is the highest priority. While we are obviously saddened by losing the DISH payments as well, that money does not have the federal match, and the rebasing does have the federal match. So that rebasing number that you see on your spreadsheets, that is twice the pain to the hospitals. So I just wanted to note that for the record, that the delay in rebasing, that $30 million your committee is saving, will cost the hospital community $60 million. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Ms. Crunky. Mr. Nelson.
Mr. Chair and members of the division, Representative Huntley, as you said, you had many painful decisions to make, and I know it wasn't easy to find $31 million to reinstate the rebasing and a COLA for long-term care workers and providers, but on behalf of the 160 members of ARM, did I introduce myself?
I'm not sure, Mr. Nelson, but just for the sake of the record, please state your name.
And on behalf of our members, about 160 of them, and the 30,000 direct support professionals, long-term care workers, I have just one message, very powerful message to say to you, and that is thank you. I know it was a very difficult decision to way to figure out how to find that money, but we deeply appreciate it. As the bill does travel through, there are a couple technical cleanup items that we'd like to be able to work with you on that would reflect legislative intent from last year. But again, on behalf of those 30,000 people, thanks very much.
Thank you, Mr. Nelson. Others that wish to testify before the division. Okay. Well, with that being said, we will move forward with Representative Abel.
Thank you. I have just a couple questions, and I could some of the target was $131 million. We talked about that in the Ways and Means Committee today, and maybe Chair Huntley will talk about the budget resolution we passed later. But and the discussion about future TAILs came up, and could somebody, I don't know if Mr. Walls knows, or I see in the bill there's a bunch of ships that are going to actually, like my county's, I talked to my county about this morning, and they're not very concerned about this bill. They thought it would be worse on them because a lot of the payments are delayed, but they're not actually cut. They're out of the biennium. So it hits our target, but doesn't really make a dent in their real cash. And so so unofficially, in Oakland County, the senior staff thinks, oh, you know, they appreciate the work on that the chair did and the committee did, which is, I just thought I want to relate that. But is there a total of, I know some of the hospital payments are never going to get out to the hospitals. And so those would be truly a cut in the tail, and some things are shifts. And is there a total of that somewhere? And is there a effect on the future tails in the bill? Like what happens in 010, 011? I look at these spreadsheets and I can't really, because some of the pots of money are within the funds, special revenue funds, for instance, which don't reflect in the net. So is that a number that I can, is available today, or should I wait for that for the floor? Or what? So I decided to ask Mr. Huntley or Mr. Walsh.
I believe you asked Mr. Walsh.
I'll ask Mr. Walsh. Get off the hook there.
Mr. Chair, Representative Abler, if you have a copy of the budget resolution, you'll see that it sets a general fund target, TANF target, and healthcare access fund target for this committee for the 2008-2009 biennium. The resolution does not speak to the 10-11 biennium. However, we were given a goal to try to reach as far as general fund savings for the 10-11 biennium, and that was a savings of $145 million in the general fund.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Chair, Representative, is there a listing of how much of those are actual money that we're never going to pay out, like in the hospital payments, which we heard a little bit about, and the county payment shift to the bank's biennium? Do you have a separate listing of those two pots of money so I can know what the cut is versus what the shifts are in the bill?
Mr. Chair, Representative Abler, there are some items that are in the bill that are shifts. There are some that are cuts, and there are some that are one-time transfers, and I do not have a list at the ready, but I can provide one for you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And maybe Representative Huntley can answer a question, too. And I think it's... I don't know if you're going to talk about this thing, but we had a short but fascinating discussion in Ways and Means about these targets. And we set targets in Ways and Means for the general fund, for the health access fund, and the TANF fund. We didn't set any targets for the state, for the special revenue funds, the work comp fund where we put that money, and so on. And every committee has jurisdiction over those funds that can actually choose to leave those intact or drain them or add to them within the general fund impact target that they have to hit. And one thing that we did in Ways and Means today, by divided vote, was to take the cash flow account money out of the whole fund, and we were going to use we told the Health Care Access Fund to become the cash flow account, and the budget reserve. And that was satisfactory, I guess, to the majority. Just one thing, cash flow account, if it's not drained, has to stay intact. So we do have a cash flow, that's statutory. We have to change that to get that money. That's not true of the budget reserve money. First, do you know offhand, we didn't talk about this, I didn't think of the question at the time, but in the House Bill 3291, we're spending health care access monies to do various things. Are those things still going to happen? And did Representative Solberg know that that's going to be now the budget, the cash flow account? Do you know offhand?
Representative Huntley.
Mr. Chair and Representative Abler, Representative Solberg is aware of 3391, if that's the right number.
Yeah.
And he does have a target for that. But that target may change if the Ways and Means Committee does it right now, the target for that other bill is
$6,000,776. Oh, so it's just a small target anyway, so it's not a large amount of money anyway. So it's trivial.
Mr. Chair and Representative, so the there is been a, if we don't change that, there is a relatively large amount of money in a health care access fund. And that could be used for the cash flow.
And I just I thought we were going to use that to buy some access later. Only out years. Thank you. Well, that's my question. I appreciate it. Thank you.
And Representative Abler, since we are on the resolution from Ways and Means Committee, to address some of the points I was going to address before we went into amendments was the appropriate areas in that resolution to this division is lines 1.17, which deals with the general fund appropriation reductions we have to make, along with lines 2.8 to 2.19, which address the Health Care Access Fund and the Federal TANF Fund. And the bill 3976 had to operate within these confines. So that's something that the committee should, or the division should keep in mind today. Representative Broad.
Thank you. I just have a specific question on the spreadsheet that we walked through. Representative Huntley, I'm just trying to, on line 201, you mentioned the county waiver overspending and that this is for some of the counties in terms of helping them out. I'm wondering, are all the counties included who have had the, who are in the situation, or is it just a few of the counties, or who does that this actually touch?
Representative Houghton. Mr. Chair and Representative Broad, there were, I believe, five counties. I could be off by one, but and four of the five in last year's bill were excused from paying that money back, and the other county, which was Carver County, was not excluded.
Okay. Mr. Chairman and Representative Huntley, can you remind me about why one county was not included in the help for these counties? Was there a specific situation, or was it just happenstance? Kind of
Representative Huntley.
Mr. Chair and Representative Broad, the I think it was the more of that particular county was $950,000, I think, and it was just a financial matter, and some of us felt that the other counties had a better reason for why they overspent.
Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Representative Hartley, I just have a different question. As I'm going through the spreadsheet, just trying to make sure I'm understanding it properly. On line 225 and then going down to line 233, I just want to understand the dynamic between the Health Care Access Fund and the use of it for the dental access, which I agree with you that that's a proper use. But I'm wondering about your rationale related to the transitional GAMT. If that's providing care to folks, why would that not be an okay use of the fund, which is intended to provide some opportunities for care? I'm just trying to understand the dynamic between the two different approaches.
Representative Huntley. Mr. Chairman, Representative Broad, my feeling was that currently we have a program for the healthier people on GAMC to move them, if they're on GAMC, try to move them into Minnesota Care, and that took 3 months in order to do that, to fully evaluate whether these people would make it on Minnesota Care or not. And the governor wanted to cut that down to so there was no time delay, so they go immediately from GAMC into Minnesota Care, and that means that Minnesota Care or Health Care Access Fund has to pay for those people for those 3 months that they wouldn't have been on Minnesota Care. The original intent of that bill was to try to divide up the people on GAMC and find out which ones were more like other people around Minnesota Care than the people that were
some of the people are on GAMC. So that was the reason we had this transitional period. And in the bill as it is right now, we chose not to speed up that transfer.
Any further questions on the bill? Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just before we move on to the amendments, I'd just like to bring up an issue of process in this. We were given the bill yesterday morning, and staff was very good about relaying that to us. At about sometime in the late morning, we had between late morning yesterday until close of business yesterday to try to get these various amendments drafted to this bill. It's using lots of different pots of money, from TANF to healthcare access funds to our budget reserves. But these are very major decisions. Then this morning in Ways and Means, or actually this afternoon, about an hour and a half ago, we found out about the finding out which of these reserve dollars were available for health care and which are not, again, making all of our amendments, or most of those, not applicable anymore. What I would like to do is make a motion to lay this over until Thursday afternoon at 12:30. To allow the minority a little bit more time to react to this, and also to hear some a little bit more input on this before we move over to a to hear amendments and move forward with a vote. So that would be my motion.
There is a motion by Representative Dean to lay over House File 3976, lay over on the table. This is not on the table. We just want to lay it over. Okay, which does matter to our ability to discuss that motion. Representative Huntley.
Well, Mr. Chair, we're supposed to have this bill in the overall finance committee by Thursday, and it will probably be Friday morning when it's voted on, but they want that bill as fast as possible. So I would urge members to vote no on this motion.
I just, Representative Mr. Chair and Representatives, I think from the folks that we're here, particularly some folks that we've heard from with specific respect to the TANF funds and also draining all of our budget reserves as we're heading into what the state economist says is a recession, is a very, very risky move on our part, and it's one that will be confounded as we move forward. I would urge caution and another 48 hours for us to absorb some of these very risky changes about expanding some of these programs at a time when we have diminishing revenues from the state. So I would urge members to vote for the motion.
Representative Dean, we can debate the specifics and reserves and all that, but actually you don't drain all the reserves. I think that's something to point out. And secondly, the reserve fund is not under the jurisdiction of this division. So. Representative Gottwald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and members, as these proposals have come forward this session, one of the big concerns we've heard from a variety of people is the speed with which they're coming through. I think Representative Dean makes a very good point about this being carefully considered and allowing the minority time to take a look at this as well as other people in the room. If our only goal is to meet deadlines and rush things through, then by all means, let's proceed. But if what we want to do is be thoughtful about this and do it right, then allowing a little extra time, I think, is not only in order, but absolutely responsible and appropriate. We can certainly play the majority game versus the minority game, and you have the votes to move this on, but I think this is a perfectly appropriate request, especially given the amount of time we've had to actually digest these details and bring this forward. I can almost expect that I'd hear from somebody, well, they did that when they were in the majority. That's not the point. The point is, are we rushing to meet deadlines that have been fixed on the calendar, or are we trying to get this done in a thoughtful and meaningful way? And I think the request is a legitimate one. I think if you accommodated it, it would be a big gesture of genuine respect for the process. So I encourage a yes vote.
Representative Pepin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would echo the comments of Representative Dean and Representative Gottwald. You know, yesterday a lot of time and thought was given to how to make these amendments and how the minority could sort of reconfigure, make some minority decisions on it. And come to find out, I didn't even know until I got here that the amendment that I am attending and offering will be ruled out of order. And I don't believe that that was communicated to all the members on the committee. I know it wasn't communicated to me. And I just feel like if there's a 24-hour rule and we find out we put amendments in and they're not even going to be in order, it just seems, well, it just puts a bad taste in my mouth. And I think it would be helpful to me, at least with my amendment, to be able to look at how I would like to refinance one of my amendments for something that I find very important. And, I just feel like yesterday we had staff waste a whole lot of time, most of the day, to do our amendments that are now, many of them, not in order. And I just think for the sake of getting along as a committee and moving forward on the up and up, I think it's really important that we lay this bill over so that we have time to find other ways to perhaps pay for some of the amendments that we'd like to offer. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Huntley, to the motion before us, what would be the pathway for this bill after this committee? Is it going to the floor? Or?
It would go to the Finance Committee, and then it would go to Ways and Means, and then to the floor.
And I also believe, actually, Representative Huntley, that it would go to taxes after Ways and Means.
Yes.
Any further discussion on the motion to lay the bill over? With none being so, all those in favor signify by aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
No. And the motion does not prevail. Representative Brown.
Mr. Chairman, I would move a short recess so that we can restructure some of our amendments and also ask the chair for consideration of the change of the 24-hour rule. I think the 24-hour rule is the rule of intent, the way I understand it, in the last committee. And our intent was to have these amendments available to us so that we could show, you know, budgets are not just about numbers. They're not just a grouping of numbers put together. They're an expression of priorities. And so I think our amendments are just our expression of our priorities as a caucus and as a group here sitting together. And so my hope would be that we can have a viable and worthwhile discussion about where we think the priorities of this bill ought to be. We can only do that if our amendments are in order. And so I would ask your latitude, Mr. Chairman, and your fairness to give us that that opportunity to make sure that our amendments, which by intent met the deadline, were in order up until 2:25 this afternoon, and now we find ourselves in a position where a number of our amendments are out of order. So if we could just have a short time to restructure them. Unfortunately, staff has done a great job putting them together, and it will require some working out of the language in terms of where we are going to be making sure that our amendments are balanced and where we get those dollars from.
Representative Broad, to your motion to recess, just a little bit of information for the members of the committee. At 4:45, the division does intend to recess for 1 hour. There are some amendments before us that we can address that are more technical in nature or policy in nature, and I think that 1 hour recess could address some of your concerns. On the intent of the 24-hour rule, not only has that been an intent, but that's been clearly communicated to the committee since, I believe, the first day that this division met, and if you were to say the rules of the committee, I believe that has been expressed
right
to us since day one.
And Mr. Chairman, and we made every effort to meet that rule in this case. And the 24-hour rule and the budget under which we were operating was the spreadsheet before us. And the spreadsheet has essentially changed by the binding of the targets. And so all we're trying to do is roll with the punches. We now have targets, which has thrown the amendments that were put out thrown them all out of order. And again, you know, that was only, that's only a two-hour-old deal. So we're just looking for a chance to make sure that we are able to communicate the priorities of our caucus at the table here as well. And then also just to set the record straight on the budget target and budget reserves, we want to make sure we're talking about it in two separate, there's a budget reserve and then the cash flow account. And the cash flow account is zeroed out, and the budget reserve in general is at, there's a total of $380 million in reserves, whereas the governor's proposal has a $703 million in reserves. And I think it is relevant to this discussion related to how we are able to fund the promises of this committee and of this state if we're passing this bill with a economy that's looking the way it is, and without a cash flow account, which makes the likelihood of short-term borrowing even greater, and that ought to be a concern of everybody sitting around this table and everybody in the room. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Broad. To amend some of my comments, the vision intends to recess at 4:30, and we still do have a motion to recess at this point.
Mr. Chairman, I'll withdraw my motion. Could we have an opportunity to just make sure that we have time with staff to get our amendments redrafted? I don't know what their, you know, what their requirements are, their commitments are during that recess time. I'd like them to have the opportunity to either eat with their families or do whatever it is that they were planning to do, while at the same time making sure that we get our amendments drafted.
Well, the division intends to recess for 1 hour, starting at 4:30. Thank you for withdrawing the motion at this time. Representative Abel.
So just help me understand, so it'll be the position of the chair that if they want to, my amendments aren't money amendments anyway, out of the bill, but the ones that they've worked on, and diligently, I think, so they could be redrafted and represented in a way that had the same theme and just a different money funding, is that right?
Representative Abler, at this time, you know, the committee has a 24-hour rule, and I think, you know, we're going to have to maintain that 24-hour rule.
Well, Mr. Chair.
And Representative Huntley, I believe.
Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, Mr. Chair and members, I was quite surprised to go to the Ways and Means Committee today and see this, but I specifically asked the chair of Ways and Means, when he presented the resolution on the budget, whether this went into effect and when it went into effect and how it would affect committee's meeting this afternoon, and he clearly told me that it went into effect as soon as it was passed in Ways and Means, and that all finance committees would be bound by the requirements of the target, and we do have a 24-hour rule, and if the amendment was not here 24 hours ago, then I think it should be ruled out of order.
Representative Abler. And Mr. Chair and Representative Huntley and the committee, I think that we have had some stellar policy debates over the course of this, the two committees with their work, and many of the chair on both committees. And I think that it's clear who has the votes, and so I can predict the outcome of every amendment that would be brought up. But I think yet the debate that gets into those amendments thematically and I think is part of the give and take of there's more than two sides to these discussions, at least the two main sides that are presented. I think if I could implore the chair and the chairman of this committee to allow those who have an interest in reworking their amendments under the new rules that are be the same topic anyway in the hour that's allowed, I think that would be respectful. And I think of the nature that would, that's been a hallmark of the leadership this two committees have shown along. So I don't know what, I mean, I have no motion, I just have a request that, that since the rules did change 2 hours ago, and there's no way that anybody knew that, and there's no one describing any guilt or any blame, just out of respect that the dialogue could go on. I would hope that the two chairs would do that.
Representative Broad.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And maybe, Mr. Chairman, you can help me understand what the rule is in the committee related to amendments to the amendment.
Representative Broad, you know, we operate under Masons. I think it's, I mean, if it's a general non-technical amendment that we can accept amendments to amendments verbally. However, when it comes to substance or technicalities and trying to understand and follow along with what exactly that any changes would be, that would have to be up to the jurisdiction of the committee of what they think is technical in nature or not.
Mr. Chairman, my reason for asking is that trying to follow the intent of where you're trying to go with the committee and keeping order in the committee, which I well understand, but yet trying to make sure that the minority has an opportunity to express our priorities of where, you know, we have about five amendments here that provide funding for nursing homes, and they're going to get ruled out of order. That's a priority. That's a priority for everyone sitting at this table, and I know it is on a bipartisan basis. So it just seems to me, Mr. Chairman, that to go in order to get the priorities talked about in the proper setting, which I believe is this committee, I don't think it's good for us to just say, you know what, there's another committee down the road that is going to have the opportunity to put forward amendments on nursing homes. That's our responsibility. We should do that. And we, you know, there's a number of amendments out there that have the potential of doing it, and we'll vote on those. But there's others that are now ruled out of order that should have the opportunity to be heard and could be heard either in an amendment to the amendment. I mean, it's just a funding source difference. That's what I'm asking. I'm just trying to find a mechanism to allow those priorities to get discussed in the proper setting, which is here. And I just would ask that during the recess that you give strong consideration to allowing those amendments is technical in terms of where the funding is coming from, because the intent and the structure of the amendment will be the same. It's just the funding source will be different.
Thank you, Representative Broad. And just for the division's consideration, you know, this isn't just an issue with your side of the aisle. I have an amendment that may, depending on what I feel like, be ruled out of order, and I think Representative Fritz, I believe, has an amendment with the same genuine concerns that you share, and able for me to speculate on what we can do for amending an amendment. I can't speculate at this time because I'm going to have to see what the substance of that is. But, you know, it is the intention of this committee to move this bill forward. We can't control what other divisions and committees do in this body, but this is what we have before us, and we will be moving on this today. Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just to go back to a comment that Representative Gottwald made, you know, that this is only my second term, but in my first term in Health and Human Services, Chairman Bradley would always give both the minority time to react, but also it's not just about partisanship or about rules of the committee or a 24-hour rule. Every person in this room who's sitting not at this table represents between a handful and tens of thousands of Minnesotans who are greatly affected by this, and we have not even taken time for public testimony on this. The public got less than an hour and a half between Ways and Means and here to weigh in on how this is going to affect people in nursing homes, people in ICFMRs, people who are receiving public assistance. And that is not good process, and good process leads to good law, and bad process leads to bad law. And I think that this is a very hasty decision, and the will of the body and the will of the state will likely be on one side and not the other. So I just want to put it on record that the public testimony for this is actually more egregious, that it was ruled out. The folks here were not given adequate time to testify and give us some representation of the folks that they represent across the state of Minnesota. That really, it's not really about our rules, it's about testimony from the public, and they're not getting it, and that's not right.
Any further discussion? Representative Bunn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to repeat some comments, I thought, in fact, we had additional time and that no one else asked to get up to testify today. So I'm a little confused by the comment maybe referring to you hoped it was indeed a future day. But in terms of today, he asked if anyone else would like to come and testify, and no one offered to come up, and there was still time remaining on the time he had allocated. So we appeared to have more time than people wanted to testify today. I just want to briefly respond to a comment made about the
the cash flow accounts that was made earlier. In the last budget crisis, 2003-2004, the current governor and the current minority did zero out the cash flow accounts, as well as completely raid permanently the tobacco account, a number of little accounts all over the budget that we later had to restore, in fact, had to restore last year, many of them, things like airport runway repair accounts, things like that. And moreover, that I was concerned about the cash flow account as well, and after inquiry, it is fairly common practice, as long as there are other existing accounts that do have a surplus, and we have identified some for 2009, that it will not increase borrowing costs or short-term borrowing in order to use those funds for that purpose. So it has been done before under the current governor, and moreover, if the governor's proposal used Health Care Access Fund money, used TANF more TANF money, et cetera, for things they weren't intended for. So instead of actual budget reserves, which are intended for this purpose, to stabilize claims over time when there are downturns.
Representative Gottwald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I won't belabor this point, but Representative Lynn, I have to respond. If somebody in my district heard what the targets were as they were set by Ways and Means 2 hours ago, they wouldn't have had time to even get here had they heard about it instantly. So the fact that people didn't get up and testify when there was more time, I don't think is quite a valid argument. And I would further point out, if you're gonna raid these funds, that's fine. I mean, we can go to the reserves and we can zero out accounts for now, but it doesn't answer the question in the next biennium. And it puts off a lot of concern because it continues the spending commitment into an area where we don't have the cash right now. And that is a concern. So when we set these targets and we don't have an opportunity for people to digest it or testify on it, it is significant. And I think we're asking for just a little leeway here to do this right. There's no underhanded attempt here to delay the bill or kill it or anything else. I think that it's just a matter of fair play for Minnesotans.
Representative Braun.
Well, I just had a question, Mr. Chairman, and maybe Representative Huntley, in your discussions in the Ways and Means Committee, I wasn't there, but was there a discussion related to how these targets connected with what the Senate is doing? Are these just temporary House targets? You know, it used to be that we actually debated the targets in an open floor debate, and now we pass them in committee, and half hour later they're implemented and executed and essentially create a fencing of different funds. But was there any discussion related to how these, is there agreement with the Senate? Are these targets just convenient for now and then all bets are off as conference committee comes forward?
Representative Chair and Representative Broad, there was no discussion in Ways and Means about how they fit in with the Senate.
At this time, there's no other request for discussion on this, and we are close to 4:30, so I will make a motion for the division to recess until 5:30. Any discussion? All those in favor, signify by aye.
Aye.
Opposed. We are recessed. Okay, we'll call the division back to order. We will be now going through the amendments before the committee, and I believe we have 18 more amendments to go. So if the division can keep that in mind. The first amendment that we'll be taking up is the A14 amendment. Representative Thiessen. Thank you, Mr. Chair. What the A14 amendment does is it deletes some language about the MINDO program that set a cap, basically, on the number of people that can enter the program, and instead of a cap, calls on the department to set a methodology so that there'd be more flexibility, you know, if there's ways to fund it so that you can let more people in with the same amount of dollars, they would be able to do that, essentially. So it's not changing the dollar amount, it's just providing some more flexibility to give them the potential to serve more people instead of just doing a hard cap. And that's really what the amendment's about.
Representative Abler.
Yeah, I'm all for this idea. Is there this bill has a ways to go. Is there some discussion on including some of the different groups and counties? Having dealt with the commissioner's department on this, folks, I think that it benefited by a little extra help. So in this inputting along the way. So you might just put that in the back of your mind, and I would expect people would talk to you about that.
Oh, big picture into developing the methodology.
Right.
Oh, yeah, fair enough.
And just a suggestion beyond this, there's a, it seems like there's a dearth of best practices in this world, and it's the case managers work, I think, very autonomously. So I think there's gold here. So I like the amendment.
Thank you. Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I just have a question for Representative Thiessen. I see in the amendment it says the commissioner must take into account the weighting system used to determine county waiver allocations in developing the new payment methodology. I don't know a lot about how all of this works, and I'm just wondering if that has any potential to kind of pick winners and losers among counties. And
Mr. Chair, and if someone from the department who helped work on this language wants to talk about it, I think what that's trying to do is preserve the current weighting system that we already have right now so that the new methodology wouldn't alter it in that. Going to your concern, I think it's trying to preserve that. If someone wants to, if there's anybody here that worked on this language who wants to comment on that, or we can answer this. Oh, yeah.
Welcome to the committee and take the minutes for the record.
Mr. Chairman, members, I'm Pam Parker from the Department of Human Services, and I manager of the MINGO and other programs over there. And I think what Representative Thiessen said is essentially correct. There is a case mix type weighting system for county allocations for home and community-based services, and we're trying to utilize that now to apply that also to the MINGO program so that they'll both be on the more on the same footing in setting rates, basically. Okay?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Huntley to the amendment. Any comments?
It's a great amendment, Mr. Chair.
Any further discussion on the A14 amendment? None being so, all those in favor, signify by aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The amendment is adopted. On to the A6 amendment.
That's mine, Mr. Chair. I will move the A6 amendment. And members, this amendment is clarifying language. Last year, we passed really two. We passed an appropriation, and it was aimed at two incentive or outreach grants for public health programs. One is an incentive to outreach organizations related to getting people. They get a bonus essentially when they sign people up, and then there are also outreach grants to serve underserved populations, which should also go to nonprofit organizations. The department has only funded the former and not the latter because of the bill was written in kind of a not as clear a way as it could have been. I mean, it said to do both of them in one place and said to do only one of them in another place. And so what this would do is take money that's not projected currently to be spent on the incentives to outreach organizations, but that's within the appropriation, and actually give that money in the form of outreach grants to the underserved population. So it's still within the forecast. It's budget neutral. It's just taking the money that's not projected to be spent on these incentives to make the outreach grants. And it's really, I think it's clarifying the intent of what we intended to do last year.
Discussion on the A6 amendment. Representative Huntley?
Mr. Chair, I support this amendment as well.
Okay. No further discussion. All those in favor, signify by aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The amendment is adopted. The A17 amendment. Representative Loeffler.
Chair and members, this amendment deals with the issue that Representative Huntley overviewed earlier about the disproportionate share payment. And this says that would direct the Department of Human Services to work with the hospitals that have high rates of disproportionate share, which is those who have a lot of medical assistance enrollees, to work together to come up with a proposal to submit to the federal government so that we can qualify. You may remember that the supplemental payments that were we're taking away. We're in an attempt to earn federal matching dollars, and other states have been successful in doing this. It's based on a, well, some states I'm told have as much as 50% of their MA budget in disproportionate share payments. We're at about 1%. And there was a federal amendment that said states that were below 3% could grow 16% per year. This is an attempt to get us to have access to those federal dollars that we haven't yet been successful at. With that, I'd take questions.
Any discussions to the A17 amendment? And I'm assuming the author of the bill accepts this amendment?
Oh, Mr. Chair, it's three good ones in a row.
Okay.
We hope that continues.
With no further discussion, all those in favor signify by aye.
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 Opposed?
Aye.
Amendment is adopted. A22 amendment. Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This amendment deals with the situation that arises when the federal government does an audit and provides for fiscal sanctions or other fiscal penalties for the states. And the bill before us just had a broad authority for the commissioner to pass those on to counties based on some random moment. This actually reestablishes or reconfirms what is my understanding is the traditional approach, which is that the department would put together a response plan, present it to the legislature, and we'd then deal with it either by appropriating general fund money, directing them to pass the federal sanctions down to the counties or to others that might be involved. I don't know if federal sanctions ever go to providers, and but you know, would just basically say they'd present to us a response plan, and the legislature would act on it, and we'd resolve whatever budget problems were created by it.
Mm-hmm. And I believe there's testimony from the department on this amendment. Welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record.
Mr. Chair, Roger Erickson, Department of Human Services. The only comment we had regarding the amendment is that it removed language that was a part of the governor's proposal, which actually sought authority for DHS to seek repayment from the counties for future disallowances. Right now, the current language applies strictly to Title IV, and so if there's future disallowances related to a very specific type or a specific type of disallowance related to audits that were conducted with what we call random sampling by CMS, where you target specific counties, do the random sampling for errors and claiming errors and other things, they determine the disallowance and apply that to all the counties that are affected by that. We don't have authority to apply that those types of disallowances to counties that are affected by it. So right now it exists only for Title IV, so we can have authority for the future. That's one of the reasons why we probably wouldn't support this amendment at this point. So the other issue is that it could create, we have to look at it a little bit closer, but a DHS has to pay these disallowances to CMS when it's received. It could create, there could be some cash flow issues in terms of DHS paying for it and not having the authority to receive repayment from the counties. So anyway, so there could be an impact, a budgetary impact on that.
Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and actually Mr. Erickson and I and we're out in the hallway talking about this, and you know, there's an acknowledgement that right now the feds are even changing the rules, and so that even when the state has followed what they believe in good faith are the federal rules, they come up with new interpretations. It's not always the county's fault. The county may be actually following the instructional bulletin that to the letter that was issued, and the department recognizes that, and I think this is a better process. It just says they come up with an explanation, a response plan, when the legislature next meets, it deals with it. And it might deal with it by appropriating general fund money, it might pass it on to others, but it says that we're part of that quality improvement loop and we actually understand what the feds are doing rather than just having it handled administratively.
Any questions for the testifier? Representative Abler.
This is actually the kind of thing that deserves an hour-long meeting, I think. But can Mr. Loeffler explain, one of the objections that the witness had was line 18 to 27 to 29, deleting that, is that necessary to make your amendment work?
Representative Loeffler.
Mr. Chair and Representative Abler, yes it is, because that's what I saw as the problem. It was this broad authority that any sanction would get passed on, no matter what the purpose or impact would be on the county, or whether even the county were at fault, if it was a changed interpretation at the federal level, where DHS had in good faith interpreted the way they wanted, the counties had done exactly what was directed, it would make them to have to absorb it all without any external review. And I think it's appropriate for us to continue the tradition that says they can come forward with a plan that may say, we're going to take it out on counties just as the 4E provision that's in the current law does. But it's always in the past, is my understanding, been done with very specific legislation as the current bill has for 4E. In the past, it was done with a food stamp sanction. I think it's good policy for us to be in the loop and to have the resolution of it worked out in a way that's upfront progress. And I think it's good quality feedback for us as well in terms of what's going on.
Mr. Chair, is there a fiscal note for this? It sounds like there might be an impact. If we're not going to, if the counties aren't going to absorb, not that they should, I'm not arguing the merits, but you have a budget bill that's very narrowly crafted, and there's a previous discussion about money, so can somebody testify to that?
Mr. Erickson, do you have comments on that? I'm sorry, I missed the question.
Is there a fiscal note, do you think, for this? Is there a fiscal note to this?
There could be a fiscal impact because, again, the state, DHS, would have to cash flow these disallowances of payments to the CMS without any ability to repay. We'd have to look further as to how to fiscal note this, but we think there would be a fiscal impact. If I may note, there's another point that was just made in looking closer at the amendments, and this might be more of a drafting issue, but it deletes a 1.3, it deletes or strikes lines 27 to 29, and if we look at the text, it looks like that would actually eliminate our current authority as well, too, for the Title 40 disallowances that we have the authority to collect. So that's a concern if you know that we wouldn't want, I don't think the intent was to eliminate even the existing authority, let alone the expanded authority we're looking for.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Lofton.
Given that there is some confusion about whether, we'd heard yesterday there was no fiscal note on it, now we're hearing that there may be some different issue, I'd like to move to delete Section 1 of Article 2. That's starting on line 13.18, and that just removes this provision from the bill at this point. Okay, I was told that I must first withdraw my amendment.
Representative Lafler withdraws Amendment 822.
And then, Mr. Chair, I would like to move to delete Section 1 on 13.18, Section 1 of Article 2.
Representative Lafler moves to delete Section 1, starting with line 13.18. I think this is more of a technical change, since it just simply deletes language within the existing bill. Any discussion on this?
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Abler.
I wish I was more versed in this topic. I'm just asking more generic questions. And is there a cost to this, since the department has to change something that they were about? Is this a neutral amendment? Is this a neutral section for cost?
Representative Abler, we'll let Mr. Erickson testify to that, but it should be, as we do have to remain within our targets. Representative Erickson? Mr. Erickson.
Mr. Erickson. Representative Abler, there's not a cost. This was technically a policy that changed at this point. There would be a cost to this bill. There could be future impacts with CMS disallowances that the state would have to try to absorb if we didn't have authority to seek repayment from the county, but not for this bill. We would not have a fiscal impact to this.
Any further discussion on the motion before us? Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Lofler, I guess I'm just not exactly clear what you're doing here, and I need a little bit more explanation. In particular, are you deleting, you're deleting Article 2, Section 1. Are you deleting current law, or are you just deleting the change that's in the bill at this time? That's what you're changing, right?
Representative Lofler.
Mr. Chair and Representative Lofler, that's correct. I'm just deleting this from the bill, so current law remains.
Okay, and so the actual change that's being made here, Representative Lofler, is just on these few lines, 18.26 to or 18.28 to 18.29?
That's correct.
Okay.
Representative Liebling, there'd have to be a repealer in order to completely remove that. So it just takes it out of the bill. Any further discussion? None being so, all those in favor signify by aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The amendment is adopted. And thank you for your testimony, Mr. Chair.
Good.
We will move on to the A21 amendment, Representative Abler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was out researching that last amendment, so I'm trying to share what we just did. I think we bought time. I think that's what we just did. So. 21. Mr. Chair, this is a. I've been informed that this is an outstanding amendment. If this were to go on this bill, the bill would be probably a way better bill. This is a technical amendment that came. I've been working on discounted payments. This would make it the fourth year in this technical part, and I think it's a great amendment for a different bill. So I think I'll just withdraw it at this time if you don't mind. So,
thank you, Representative Abler, and to recognize your. Your consideration for the committee will go on to the A1 amendment.
Thank you.
This is also yours.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to point out every amendment has passed so far, except for the one I withdrew voluntarily. So with that in mind, I would hope the committee can be equally enthusiastic. Well, the one that you withdrew your amendment, except the one you... Hey, never mind. So, Mr. Chair and members, I am concerned... in my opening comments about the bill, I mentioned that my county was comfortable that nothing much was going to happen to them. They're delaying a couple payments and a couple shifts here and there, and they were really expecting a lot more of the rain to fall on them, and which I think will not fall until 2009 now. I'm concerned, and I understand the chair's work on this bill, and I'm not even arguing about that part, but I having sat through a lot of cut years since I've gotten here and not enjoying any one of them, I'm concerned that... we're facing some significant shortfalls in the 2010, 2011 years, and the forecast calls for this increase $1.4 billion in our DHS budget from this planning to next. The planning estimate increase in the 2010, 2011 biennium, just in the forecast from last November, is $141 million more, which actually is ironically even larger than our target for this bill. And so... but the question remains, how do you find a way to manage the money? At some point, we have to quit spending money like we do, and the alternative is, of course, to raise taxes, which many of you ran on. Oh, most of you didn't run on that. And so I think if we can manage within our allocations, I think that'd be wise. But the trouble is, who will do that? It was just interesting to hear the welfare group come forward saying the same discussion they said when we were here in charge, and how can you do that? And the question is, it's hard to do that. And so I suggest to this amendment that we set up a system whereby somebody else could do that. but somebody who's actually quite knowledgeable and deeply involved, deeply vested and interested. And my goal, were we to do this, to put the government under management, this department under management, would be that there would be no loss of function to the people we're serving. And I would attempt to not even lose any state employees in this. And so what I propose in the A1 amendment is to establish what's called the Health and Human Services Finance Board, and there would be 30 people on it, appointed by the governor at least to start with. And this is kind of placeholder language, but we would then give DHS a third of the votes, because they know a lot, and they're our people. Give the counties a third of the votes, because they're the people actually, we are a county-led system, and then we give a third of the votes to the nonprofits, and that could be tweaked up, the Poverty Commission, whoever you want to throw in there, but for now you'd have 30 people, and we would give them the job of managing within a 3% increase per annum the DHS budget, and we'd give them some authority, much as we're going to give the Healthcare Transformation Commission authority in healthcare. We're going to let them, you know, the proposal was to give them a lot of peace. And I'm a little uncomfortable with that, but it seems like the committee was kind of working that way, and there was a lot of great comfort in giving people that kind of authority. So I thought, well, let's give another group authority to actually manage the budget. And so they would have authority
within these, the caring minds of the county's kind of the administrators, the nonprofits that provide a lot of the humanitarian understanding of the little groups, and DHS that provide the liaison with the feds, to go about doing this. There's a zillion details to this, where it's done, and I'm afraid that a page and a half wouldn't quite do it, but I wanted to put on paper an idea that might move us in a way to get this accomplished, because we are in dire straits. Not just because of this year. To balance $1 billion has gotten too easy for us. We've done that already. We balanced $4.5 billion. And I want to remind folks that when we balanced the $4.5 billion, the Senate, with a tax increase, only brought forward a $1 billion tax increase. We still have $3.5 billion to manage. So it's a challenging, challenging time. And I'm fearful worse is yet to come. And so I don't know if we have the will as a legislature.
Representative Abler, I've been informed that the recording devices are not working at this time. So, and we'd love to hear everything that you say for all time. So we're going to have to recess until we get the recording device
over
working. Yeah. I will let you make that decision. So the chair will make a motion to recess.
I was making a
motion. Okay. All those in favor for recessing till we fix the recording devices at the call of the chair. All those in favor signify by aye.
Aye.
Opposed.
No.
I just didn't keep talking.
Are you sure it's not recording, or is it just a clock?
The red phone.
That's
the red phone.
It's funny.
Yeah. That was the red phone. And you're at a 25
to me. No, I'm going to have to do that.
Can you help me?
Yeah, there's a couple of guys.
Turn up the volume. No, okay, so I'll see you in a second.
And that would work in the year.
Exactly.
Hey, there we go.
Okay, we were able to fix the technical difficulty, so we will call the division back to order. Representative Abler.
Mr. Chair, I think what happened was that the people listening at home, there were so many clicks and they heard me start talking that they changed the station, that it must have overloaded the, there's a backfeed thing there that must have been the thing. I'm not going to start over, I'm just going to continue on, and I don't want to beleaguer the committee tonight with this, but I just said there's a fiscal note to it, and even though we made them take it out of their operations budget, they got millions of dollars that they could spend, but where they can... Anyway, Mr. Chair, this is actually a serious amendment, I think it's an idea you want to think about. Is this or some other way to do it? What happens is the people who don't get cut are the people with the best lobbying firms, and the people with the most compelling stories, and the people with the... telling the saddest tale, and the matter is that there's some terrible tales we never get to hear about, and I think that we as representatives understand a part of our world, but the minute you try to cut something, when you start really cutting stuff, this is a starter bill for cutting. When you really have to start cutting, should you prevail in elections and you're in charge next year, you'll see a whole new worldview of cutting. And what all the postcards come out, especially at our side of the aisle, is how could you cut that? You know, you didn't care about grandma, you didn't care about whoever. And it works both ways. But at the end of the day, you got to manage. You have a duty to manage the government. And I don't believe that you'll be changing governors for two more years. Or if you do, you'll get one quite like what you have now. And there's not going to be another tax coming your way. And so we're going to be in our means. And so who best to figure this out? And I would just suggest, not us. The people that we would oversee, there's language that says we can undo what they do. But somebody had better come forward with some real ideas about how to manage this thing and decide how to do it. And we sat with a hearing here with Mr. Emmer and the family that he was representing. And if they could add $80,000 bathroom put in their house, they could save $120,000 a year. And we had to do a waiver to the waiver program that maybe would get passed. In this kind of situation, the county, this group, as they looked at the need for service, would say, well, $80,000? Actually, we got a county guy who can do it for $40,000 because we got builders and we know people. And it's actually all public money. And we're going to serve this family as best they can. We're going to pay $40,000 and save $120,000. We all win. Instead of the federal money is free, and to the county, the state money is free, and to the city, the county money is free. But none of it's free. This needs some more work. Before we all start running up and testifying about it, I'm going to withdraw it in about just a few seconds. But when we get to discussion about what not to do and who not to serve, it's going to be a very, very difficult discussion. And I didn't enjoy that in 2002 and 2003 and the times in between.
But I hope that as this goes forward with this bill, which barely dents the tails, this version, by the way, would create $400 or $500 million of positive impact in the budget, and I think nobody would be disturbed. With that, Mr. Chair, I'll just lay it over, and I appreciate the chance to talk about it.
Thank you, Representative Abler, and just my own editorial comment. I think this is an issue that we're going to have to get on top of, because we're not going to stop people from getting older and stop people from having disabilities and getting sick. And all those populations are increasing, and nobody likes to cut or decrease services. And we're going to have to start thinking out of the box, collaboratively and innovatively. So I don't know if this is the answer, but maybe it will open up that discussion. So thank you. We'll go on, though, to another amendment. Representative Huntley.
I just had a comment. Representative Abler said the people who have the best lobbyists don't get cut. And I took just the opposite approach, and I cut the people that had the best lobbyists, Sue Stout and Mary Krinke.
Thank you, Representative Huntley. We'll move on to the A2 amendment. I'm Representative Abler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'll explain this, and I don't know if this can be considered to be a policy amendment, but this simply says that there's a room full of data, probably a warehouse full of data, sitting somewhere in DHS land of medical assistance and GAMC data, which could be used to productive purposes, and this would allow through some method of them aggregating it that could be studied by people who are known to be good at studying things. And I listed just three off the top of my head and others. I think that we can learn a lot from what we've already done. And I understand that there's a lot of this data has not been scrutinized. This would be fee-for-service data, primarily, I would expect. That's in this big reservoir of usage. And there's diagnostic numbers tied to it. There's utilization to be derived, population trends. The Mayo Clinic has had great success looking back into their archives and giving data about this. So if it's the opinion of the chair that this is a policy amendment, then I'll withdraw it and put it on a different bill. But I hope that we can do this somewhere. I think the data will be useful. And if this needs some technical changes, I would invite people to help me with that.
Thank you, Representative.
What's your ruling? Is this a policy amendment?
I would say this is a policy bill, and I think there's opportunities down the road still this year to be able to address this possibly.
Mr. L. Let's draw the amendment. Thank you.
And one more, Representative Abler, A9.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is my, I've been trying to irritate as many constituency groups as I can have around lately, and so my orthopedists still like me, so I wanted to go after them on this, some of the specialists. And it's not written quite right. But here's the concern I have. And by the way, with regard to my orthopedist and specialist, if you're living on medical assistance payments, I need to talk to you about your practice management styles. We are in a medical home. We talked about that, and there's work going on in there. Some of these frontline clinics who are living on a high percentage of medical assistance clients either have to have a subsidy from somewhere or they just can't afford to stay in business. And the point of this, and this is not written quite right, and so I think I need to withdraw it on my own and rework it a bit. But I want to discuss the idea that at least there's words now we can talk about this. If I can get it ready for the floor, I'll see if people will agree to it there. But I'll tell you the idea. I said 50% of an increase, mostly in the exam and initial consultation rates for the safety net providers and the primary care clinics to get them to take medical assistance and GAMC clients in particular, and put some time into those folks, and to be more, at least not lose money in every visit that they get. And since I have to neutral, we've been trying to reduce utilization of some of the higher end specialty services, which just doesn't say quite like I would have, and maybe even imaging, to push the money forward. I believe that it would be true that if we push more money into those primary care, you'd save money anyway on the back end. If you had a better coordination, you would need so many specialists and so on, and that would be part of my reason for withdrawing it now. But I think
as a clinician in the system, I was just talking to an optometrist today. That in the midday day, they were a fellow from up there. And there's some clinics up there that have half of the people are on state programs. And they somehow make the doors open, but they barely do some of those clinics. And I think if we have a state program that we're using, we have to make people afford to take it. I can't offer any relief to the dentist at this point. But I think we can offer relief to the primary care portal entry providers. And so the purpose of this is to try to push the money on the front end. And I don't know what the reduction would be in the back end. I'm thinking 5% or something for the high-end clinicians, which would be, I think, a nick. So that's the idea. And again, just offering. So what we use is I'm offering. I'll withdrawing these, I guess. I would appreciate people's help with this if you like the idea. And those in the audience and tell the orthopedists I still like them. And I want them to thrive and be part of our Minnesota fabric. So with that, Mr. Chair, I'll withdraw the amendment.
Thank you, Representative Abram. We will move on to the A16 amendment, which for the division is my own amendment. This amendment creates a floor and a potential ceiling for the rebasing proposal that was passed out of the legislature last year. The rebasing initiatives were founded on good intentions to try to bring payments up to the actual cost for services within our long-term care facilities. Due to budget constraints and having to meet our particular targets last year, we had to extend rebasing over 8 years, and there were some unintended consequences with the proposal that we had. Due to the phasing in that we did, several homes would receive less than a 1% increase this year. That was never the intention. Actually, well over 100 homes, if we continue on the current law, will receive under 1% to their reimbursements. And in my mind, that's unacceptable and an unintended consequence of the legislation that we passed. I would like to see the House and the entire legislature to not allow this to happen to address this. And I think there's still time in the process to be able to address this through policy changes. And currently, the legislation, as it is written, does have to have fiscal impacts into the out years. So rather than kind of embarrass myself and rule myself out of order, I will be withdrawing this. But I think we need to have a discussion on this, and I hope that the author of the bill and the members on this committee can ensure that we move forward by addressing this before we get to the end of the session. So, and there's some comments on this, so we'll Representative Fritz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And on the amendment, on the rebasing of the piece of the amendment, I'd like to know what happens to the money that is there for this year.
I'm sorry, Representative Fritz, I was doing something. Can you repeat your question?
In your amendment, Chair, on the rebasing money that is there that we put there last year that is available this year, what happens to that money in with this amendment?
Okay. Representative Fritz, that money would still be available. However, it would be distributed to nursing homes based on a formula that phases in a certain percentage over 8 years to the, I believe, the 2008 rate. So some nursing homes will receive, let's say, for an example, a 4% increase, and others would have a 0% increase. What I propose in this legislation is to have a 1% floor, and then with the available money that's out there, the commissioner and the department would establish what the ceiling would be. So it would use the available money that we've already appropriated, make sure that nursing homes at least get a 1% increase, and then those that do have the greatest discrepancies in their reimbursements would exceed that 1%.
And to that point, Mr. Chair, may I? I do have an amendment, the A20 amendment to your bill on the rebasing, and that that would be encumbered. 75% of that rebasing going forward would be encumbered. And I do have someone here to speak to that, if I could, if I might, for one minute.
Representative Fritz, since I'm withdrawing this amendment and won't be voting on it, I will afford the opportunity for 1 minute testimony just to make sure that we get the...
It's important, members, and if you remember, the encumbrance is for 75% of that rebasing money to go to the worker, to the direct care worker, the nursing assistant, those folks that are doing the work on the line. And
Welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, my name is Kristen Beckman. I work with the Service Employees International Union, and I'm a part of the Coalition of Seniors and Workers for Quality Coalition. I appreciate Representative Fritz in a dogged support of this. There is so few dollars within long-term care system right now that the workers, the folks who have these jobs in your districts are desperate for these raises. And so Representative Fritz has continuously fought for having this money set aside so that it can go to the workers and that we have this guarantee of some sort of support within the facilities and within home care services. So we appreciate this amendment, and I understand, you know, what you have to do with it, but thank you for the opportunity to just raise the issue and make sure that this money gets to the folks who are doing this good work in your district. Thanks.
Thank you so much. Representative Gottwald, you have...
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll be brief. As somebody who signed on as a co-author of this bill, which forms the basis for this amendment, I just heartily endorse you bringing it forward. I realize why you're withdrawing it tonight, but I would second what you said about the need to get to this. We've delayed increases for nursing homes too long. They're suffering as a result of it, and I appreciate what Representative Fritz is trying to do for the long-term care workers as well. But obviously the nursing homes are one area that are in critical need.
Representative Huntley.
Well, Mr. Chair and both Representative Gottwald and the Chair and Fritz, you know, this, if we can figure out a way to do this in a really cost-neutral way, I don't see any reason why we wouldn't do it at some of the other stops along the way.
Thank you, Representative Huntley, for indicating that, and I will make sure that we'll work on this. And I know there's many stops before us, so we do have some time.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Fritz, Representative Gottwald. With that, I didn't move the amendment, so I guess I don't officially have to withdraw it. But I appreciate the chance for the discussion, and this won't be the last of it. We'll move on to the A15 amendment. Representative Fritz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I also understand, Mr. Chair, that this is probably going to be ruled out of order as well, but it's too important of an issue, members, not to speak up again tonight and to continue to speak up. This is a 5% increase in the cost of living to the nursing home workers, and again, it's encumbered at 75% of that 5% go to the workers. And also, I just wanted to add that we certainly have heard testimony all summer long. We traveled throughout the state. We went to your district, Mr. Chair, and we went to Representative Hamilton, and we started off in Faribault. Representative Broad attended, Representative Teeth, and many local folks, administrators, nursing home workers, residents themselves, their daughters and sons, and administrators, directors of nurses, everyone that worked in the nursing home industry came to testify to tell their story. And again, we heard over and over again how many of them are operating on a shoestring and that so many are ready to close. And it's a very heated issue for most of us, and we're very disappointed to see when the governor put his budget out that nothing will be given to them this year. So I am very, very grateful that we are held harmless, Representative Huntley, in your bill. However, I cannot speak. I cannot come here tonight again and not plead for more. 5% is what we're asking. We asked for 7% last year. It was cut to 3% in conference. It ended up at about 1.5% is what the folks got. These are people that are doing the online hard, hard, heavy lifting work of our elderly sick population. Again, I am pleading for some increase. The 5% cost of living is what I have asked you for in this amendment. I understand that you're going to look at the rebasing money, and I appreciate that. And before I withdraw my amendment, I just wanted to make one last plea for your help in trying to find at least a few percent of increase in their rates when they are behind 15%. And with that, I'll withdraw my amendment. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Fritz. we'll go on to the A8 amendment. Representative Gottwald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll be offering this amendment. This is a 5% increase in each year, 2010-2011, for nursing homes and ICFMRs. It transfers $273.5 million from the Healthcare Access Fund to the general fund to cover this expense. I believe that's line 5 of our spreadsheet. Again, I mean, this is along the lines of what we've already been discussing about the need for increases for nursing homes and ICFMRs, frankly, for that matter, another facility that is in need of our support at the funding level. I think this is the right thing to do. I would encourage your support of the amendment.
At this time, I think we should have discussion on the amendments. I will make a ruling on the amendment in some time, but discussion on the amendment in particular. Representative Huntley.
Mr. Chair and members, there's a lot of things we don't do a very good job of in the legislature, and funding the people that take care of our grandmas and mothers and in nursing homes, we have not done a good job for a long time in this state, and this is a very serious issue. If you want good people taking care of your mom, then you have to pay them a livable wage, and we're not doing that today. So I certainly understand the emotion of this, and it is something that we need to do if we have the money.
Mr. Chair, we'd like a roll call on this.
Well, before we... I'll just at this time, a roll call has been requested, and the chair is going to rule this amendment out of order due to violating the balance, the fiscal balance between the Ways and Means budget resolution. Representative Dean.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to appeal the ruling of the chair and ask for roll call.
Duly noted, and we'll definitely do that. Representative Abler.
I'll pass.
Okay. Representative Broad.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, it's my understanding that the targets in place are not in place for the out years, and I believe that Representative Gottwald's amendment actually funds this in the out years. And so I'm wondering if you could explain your ruling related to how this unbalances or exceeds the targets of 08-09.
Well, due to changing, I mean, you know, this is essentially transferring healthcare access dollars into the general fund, increasing the general fund expenditures for this year, and then Representative Brown.
Mr. Chairman, the general fund dollars that would be expended actually would be expended in a different year than the targets are in place for, and so I just want to make sure that maybe as we go through the amendment, it wasn't explained in full, and maybe Representative Gottwald would talk a little bit about the funding source in 10-11 for this proposal so that we can make sure that we're all on the same page.
Representative Gottwald, to the amendment, and I'm reading some of the part of it right now.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think, as I mentioned when I introduced the amendment, this is transferring $273.5 million from the Healthcare Access Fund for increases in 2010-2011. I'm sorry if I wasn't completely clear about that, but that does fall outside of the target for 08-09. So I would respectfully appeal your ruling as well.
Representative Gottwald, when looking at the amendments, starting at 9.23, I do see that it is for the out biennium. Due to the budget resolution, I will withdraw my ruling. And I am sorry for my ruling. I did not read it correctly.
I withdraw my motion.
Discussion on the amendment. Representative Liebling.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know,
I think everybody around this table agrees that we need to do a better job in funding of our nursing homes. But, you know, I have to say that I have a real problem doing that out of the Health Care Access Fund. And, you know, the Health Care Access Fund was established to do a certain kind of health care, and that was to provide health care for low-income working people, to give them insurance. The Health Care Access Fund, as you all know, is funded by the provider tax, which is not a broad-based tax. It's a tax on providers of health care and therefore on people who are sick. And, you know, I personally would be willing to vote for whatever revenues are necessary to fund the nursing homes, but frankly, I think that doing it in this way out of the Health Care Access Fund really violates a promise that was made to providers when that tax was instituted. And I think it's the wrong way to go. That if we as a legislature think that it's important to fund nursing homes, and I do, then we ought to do it the right way, and that is to spread that across our general fund and have it funded broadly throughout the state and not by people who are sick and going to the doctor and having to pay more to do that. And so I'm going to vote no on this amendment, not because I don't think the nursing homes should get the funding. I mean, certainly I do, but I think that if we want to fund nursing homes, that we ought to be willing to do it the right way.
Thank you, Representative Huntley.
Well, Mr. Chair, if we vote this up, then there will be inadequate money in the Health Care Access Fund in the coming years to keep the people enrolled that are currently enrolled, so I would ask you to vote no. This will kick kids out of health insurance.
Representative Murphy.
Yes.
Our list is getting long, so I will get to members that have indicated wanting to speak to this. Representative Varad.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I just think that it's important to put some information on the table related to the Health Care Access Fund and the balance that is in the Health Care Access Fund. In 08, it's a significant balance of $262,758,000. 2009, $338 million, and again, this is balance after expenditures or expected expenditures. 2010, it's $378 million, and 2011 is $403 million. Now, we could either let the dollars sit there, or we can lower the tax and give them back to the people who have been paid, or we could use the money for something that is desperately in need. So I just wanted to make sure that the members of the committee had those balances as they consider their vote.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In fact, I just opened up my mail, and once again, I have another letter from, this is from the West Metro Medical Society, representing 4,300 physicians, who are once again asking us not to take resources out of the Health Care Access Fund for anything but those that were designated. And as much as I support nursing home increases and the need for them, I, along with Representative Liebling, would be willing to find monies other places, but I think at least I have made a commitment to the doctors, the physicians, and the people who are putting the money into this fund to use those monies for the designated purposes, and I plan to keep that commitment.
Representative Abler.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. It's been an interesting day all in all. We made a proposal back in November, I think it was, for some health care ideas. And in that proposal, we protected the Health Care Access Fund, if you recall. There's some other things that are controversial in there, but at least we made a point to do that. So I've been a fan of that all along. I was surprised today to hear, through no, Mr. Chair was surprised to hear today, too, that that's now the health, that's the cash flow account for the state, which I think would have the, which would have the purpose of encumbering it anyway, which I think is very interesting. That'll be a discussion probably on the floor on some of these things and other ways and means meetings. And I'm not sure if the medical professionals that wrote that letter knew that they were, that their account was encumbered now to cover paying the bills as they come and they go. This is an interesting amendment. I think that if we push this money from this fund then they'll have to find some other cash flow account. But the money going out of here to this that will actually go to nursing home workers, it's actually encumbered, as they just said they would have liked, and it's by helping buy some health insurance. So maybe we'll be covering some uninsured to this way. So maybe it's a really good amendment, even better than you thought. So thanks, Mr. Chair. Just here to help, you know.
Thanks, Representative Abrams. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to point out that the doctors do care for our residents in our nursing homes, too. So when they pay the provider tax, they have also taken care of many nursing home residents. So I don't see any reason why we shouldn't consider that as, you know, part of that tax that they pay, because they are caring for our loved ones in nursing homes. At least they're certainly caring for my mother.
Thank you. Representative Rick.
Well, I would have to speak in favor of this amendment as well, because it does encumber the money, and it is out in the out years, and it's very needed.
Representative Bunn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One, I want to underscore what others have said in terms of I've been receiving email for the last many weeks from dentists throughout my district, from doctors throughout my district, saying, what is this I've heard that the governor is suggesting we take health care access fund money to use to solve the budget problem? I made a commitment to them and others, members of the East Metro Medical Society, that that's not what we would be doing, because we intend that for the purpose it was originally designed for. In addition to that, in terms of the comments were made about what the current forecasted fund balances in the Health Care Access Fund, as you all know, we have a whole interim spent on talking about health care reform. And those funds in the Health Care Access Fund will be crucial to filling the uninsured gap, and, well, not the uninsured gap, but also the gap with currently working people who can't afford the private insurance being offered them. So we will see in the next few years, as we move forward on health care reform initiatives, a use to put these funds to that was the intended use, to fill that difference between what they can afford and the health insurance in the private sector, in fact, that they're being offered, so they can afford that private sector insurance. And I think that's consistent with the intent of what this fund was created for.
Representative Brown.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I hope that our health reform isn't all about pulling people out of private insurance and putting it into public insurance, because just when we think about, you know, the payment rates that we do for public programs, we think about all those things. The best reform we could do is to get as many people possible on private insurance plans in a variety of different ways versus just relying upon expanding the public programs. And so, you know, I know that the reform proposal is yet to come forward, but, you know, having these dollars here is great. Having a surplus in this amount is excessive. And so I'd like to either see that money go back or to see it used for something desperately in need. And my hope is that any health care proposal that we pass out of this body really focuses on getting people insured in the private market, where in an affordable fashion. I think that should be the focus of this committee. But, Mr. Chairman, that gets away from the amendment, and I apologize for taking that latitude.
Representative Gottlob.
Thank you.
I'm sorry. Hold on. I didn't look at my list. I just looked at you, Representative Gottlob. Representative Bunn.
thank you, Mr. Chair. I just need to respond because, Representative Broad, I stated explicitly that I was talking about initiatives in the reform package that had to do with helping pay the differential between private programs, private insurance that's being offered, and what the employee could actually afford. And so it's an attempt to keep them in the private market, off public programs, because we have individuals, several were highlighted in the newspapers last winter, that have been offered private insurance with the company, but they have family of four, little children, husband makes $30,000, has been offered insurance, but they can't afford the insurance. So we have initiatives coming forward that would use these types of funds to fill that gap so as to encourage the continuation of private sector insurance. And that's what I had said in my remarks.
Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is a great amendment. And once again, we have priority before us to fund nursing homes. In the last session, we had some priority decisions about expanding our public programs or putting the money into nursing homes. And Representative Finstead had on the floor a 5-5 amendment that weighed those two decisions. The body made its decision, and we moved forward. The decision was made. We cast our votes. And I think we made a mistake in underfunding the nursing homes. So here we go. This is an opportunity to correct that mistake in the next biennium. And so once again, we have an opportunity before us to make a priority decision. As with the provider tax, it isn't the best opportunity for that, but it is health care, and I think most physicians understand that. We had an opportunity to reduce the sick tax last week, and we had a priority decision on that. So I think these are just a series of priority decisions, and members should remember that we are making those now, just as we did last year, and it's a good amendment, and it's a good step in the right direction.
Representative Gottwald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll be brief. Healthcare Access Fund, healthcare access for seniors, healthcare access for seniors in nursing homes. We've all talked about this issue. Part of the reason I put a roll call out is exactly what Representative Dean just commented on. This is a matter of priorities. I think given the fund balances in the Healthcare Access Fund, this should be a priority. It is helping our seniors get access at a critical time in their lives to a facility. Many of them would tell you flat out they don't want to be in a nursing home, but when they need to be there, they need to be properly funded. I would also point out that especially in rural areas, the people who are subsidizing nursing homes right now because we're not paying enough to them are the providers. The hospitals, the clinics they're attached to are in fact subsidizing nursing homes because the nursing homes can't pay the bills. So these it's pay now or pay later. So they're paying into the healthcare access fund. They're also paying to subsidize those facilities right now. I think a number of them would tell you they'd rather see the facilities paid properly so they don't have to subsidize them. So this is offered in good faith. That's a sincere amendment. Representative Huntley, your comment about children losing health care, they might lose state-funded health care, but I would point out last year when we did the cover all kids, we covered about half of all kids, and half of those were taken off of private coverage and put on public coverage. And we've spoken a little bit to that here. I think this is a perfectly appropriate place to find the dollars. And would encourage your support. I think, that just as Representative Dean pointed out, this is a matter of priorities. 5% and 5% in 10 and 11, that's 2 years hence, is the least we can do, I think. And this is an opportunity for us to do it. And we know where the dollars are coming from.
Representative Thiessen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And not to prolong the debate, but I guess to prolong the debate, I also think we have to remember where this situation derived from when we start talking about priorities. And I know, Representative Gottwald, you weren't in the legislature. But in 2003, for that biennium, nursing home rates increased 0.5%, well below their need. In 2004 and 2005, it was below what we actually did last year again. So we are digging out of a hole, but it's not a hole that was just created, as Representative Dean seemed to indicate last year. This is a hole that was created a long time ago, and I think that needs to stay in the record. We also put on a 3% increase that passed off the floor last year, and Governor Plenty vetoed it or sent it back to us. And by his decision and his insistence, the money that was left on the table, over half of our general fund spending went to nursing homes. So I think we have to keep the record here clear as well. I understand that there's an issue around nursing homes, and we need to solve it over the long term, but I do think that this is an improper use of the Health Care Access Fund, and I would encourage people to vote no as well, and we have to remember history and what got us here as well.
Representative Gottwald.
And very briefly again, I realize I wasn't here, but I do recall we were in a deep, deep deficit caused in part by spending commitments, and again, those go to priorities. So we can spend a lot of time pointing fingers. My point is, in 2010, 2011, what are we going to be doing for our nursing homes? And here's a chance to do something.
I just want...
Sorry.
Representative Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Gottwald, 2003, yes, not in 2001 and 1999. We had surplus money and there was not a commitment to nursing homes then.
I would just like to say a few things on this amendment. I'm really frustrated, not because of the amendment, but because of the situation that we're in. I feel that we've been given false choices. If you look at the back of your session weekly that just came out this week, children living in poverty went up by over 30% in the last 7 years. That's unacceptable. Children are losing health insurance. And I don't want to be given a choice of picking one or the other and winners and losers. And that's frustrating for me. Nursing home funding is something that we have fallen behind on. We have not committed ourselves appropriately. I get frustrated when Representative Fritz, when we go down to Representative Hamilton's district, and there's testimony that a newly hired pig handler is paid more than somebody who's caring for our seniors. That's unacceptable, and that didn't happen overnight. And we need to address this issue. And as I said earlier, we're not going to stop people from getting older, but we also have to recognize that taking money from one area and putting it into another area does have consequences. And prioritization is always a good political word, but there's consequences with both priorities and the facts are facts. Healthcare Access Fund was set up for insuring people. I have hospitals and I have doctors, and actually Representative Gottwald, the same doctors that we just talked about emailing us, have also emailed us not to take money from the Healthcare Access Fund. And that's something that we have to recognize, and I hope we can step up to the plate. I hope we can find general fund dollars, and I hope we can make the difficult decisions. But I don't want to make a decision that takes from one area in which I don't think we've made enough of a commitment to and putting it into another area. So thank you for allowing my 2 cents. No. Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to offer an oral amendment to the amendment.
Representative Liebling, I hope that is so technical.
Well, Mr. Chair, what it would do is change the funding source from the Healthcare Access Fund to adjusting the income tax rate for the top bracket to cover the cost of the increase. So
Representative,
I guess the chair can decide whether that's in order.
As the chair, I'm going to have to rule that out of order. I consider that a substantial change. Although I may not oppose it, it's a substantial change, and you can challenge the ruling if you'd like, but I will have to rule that out of order.
No,
Mr. Chair, I would accept it as a friendly amendment.
It is a substantial change, and I think for the sake of sticking to the rules that have been established by this committee, that I will rule that out of order. However, the committee can challenge that ruling if they like. Representative Liebling.
No, well, if the chair is ruling it out of order, I'm not going to challenge that point.
Okay. Representative Gottwald.
Just real quickly again. You just made the comment, Mr. Chair, that we hope we find it. We hope we find it in general fund. We may be facing as much as a $3 billion deficit in the coming biennium. So it's going to get tougher and tougher and tougher to find these dollars for our seniors and for other people. So I'm not seeing that getting any easier. I'm seeing that getting much, much tougher as we go on. So
very much agree, Representative Gottwald. But we do have to maintain the rules that have been established by the committee. So. Any further discussion on the amendment? A roll call has been requested.
Huntley?
No.
Kepler?
Yes.
Anderson? Brad?
Yes.
Ben?
Yes.
Well,
thank you.
Yes. Erickson?
Yes.
Fritz?
Yes.
Gottwald?
Yes.
Liebling?
No.
Lassiter?
No.
Murphy?
Nope.
Alexander?
Yes.
Stepan. Peterson.
No.
Hewitt.
No.
Flowick.
No.
Tell.
No.
Peterson.
No.
Walker.
No.
Harsh.
No.
With it being 7 ayes and 12 nays, the amendment is not adopted. The A3 amendment.
Mr. Chair, that's mine. I'm going to withdraw the A3.
Representative Dean withdraws the A3 amendment. The A4 amendment.
Mr. Chairman, that's my amendment. Unfortunately, it's out of balance within your targets, and so I will not offer that amendment.
Representative Broad, the A11 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm still looking for that amendment, but what this amendment is actually it's good timing. It's essentially a rate reduction for the provider tax. It's a contingent rate reduction. When we have significant surpluses in the health care access fund, what we ought to be doing with that money is making sure that it's going back to the people to lower health care costs altogether and make sure that we're not kicking people off of health care in terms of affordability. And so essentially what it does, Mr. Chairman, is just doesn't allow a slush fund in the health care access fund, but triggers a reduction of the provider tax when there is a surplus in that fund. This is the folks that brought up, the doctors that are calling them and talking to them. So the rate reduction or reducing the provider tax is something that's been on the on their minds for a long time, and this is a very prudent way of going about that. It doesn't just say we're going to reduce the tax. It just says if there is a surplus, then that tax triggers down, and it's that downward motion is only contingent upon that surplus. So it still funds the purpose of the health care access fund, while at the same time does not allow a slush fund or a cash flow account for our state. And Mr. Chairman, I appreciate a roll call.
Thank you, Representative Broad. A roll call has been requested. Representative Huntley.
Doesn't this affect the balance in the health care access fund?
Representative Huntley. I believe it would affect the changes of the net expenditures established by the Ways and Means Committee with the rate reductions beginning almost immediately.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Broad.
The way my understanding of how this works is that this rate reduction would only occur if the surplus is achieved in that fund, and so I really don't understand the mechanism as to how this would break the target, because it doesn't change any expenditures. It's just changing the collections of that fund, and so maybe somebody can help explain how this breaks the target cap. Looks like Representative Abler might be walking my way to help out.
Yeah. Representative Huntley.
Well, we are required at the end of 2009 to have $3,293 more dollars in the health care access fund than would currently be forecasted to be there. So we can't make any cuts in the tax, because then we won't have the dollars that we're supposed to have in this fund.
Mr. Chairman, I just have a technical amendment to my amendment. It should say 2009. On line 1.7, Mr. Chairman, strike 7 and insert 9.
Representative Broad, I think that's technical enough in nature. Representative Huntley.
Mr. Chair, it still results in a shortfall over what the Ways and Means Committee has asked us to do in this biennium.
Mm-hmm. Okay. From discussions with fiscal staff, I believe that this wouldn't create reductions, actually. According and to the budget resolution, so I do think this is in order fiscally this time. So, Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is another priority opportunity that we have. The provider tax is a regressive tax that we have imposed upon our dentists and physicians across the state. And this says that if we take too much money from them, we put it back into the system and directly lower the cost of health care. We want to take the provider tax down. We don't want to add it. And this would not lose one person from their benefits. This would just apply to the surplus. And so that it would be harmless all enrollees. This would just prevent another pile of money from piling up and for us to use it for other purposes. So if you don't like using those funds, the thing that we should do is give it back to the folks and lower the cost of medicine. So this is an excellent amendment and another good opportunity for us.
Representative Brock.
Mr. Chairman, I also did just wanted to put out this isn't just an amendment. I actually have a bill that does exactly what this amendment does. And so I put the bill in the hopper. I think it was actually in the last session. So this isn't new. It's not something that I'm just bringing out. I know that Representative Dean actually offered an amendment in terms of this being a priority of trying to lower the tax. And this is just a really responsible way to go about it. When you have a fund that has $400 million sitting there, you know, we already heard it today where, you know, the new cash flow account, I think that that would be offensive to the doctors if they heard that that was what this fund was going to or potentially could be used for. And I think also in terms of the cost of health care, you know, it shouldn't be that fund. And we all complain about it. And so this is just a really responsible way of going about ensuring that that does not happen, while at the same time keeping the fund keeping the dollars in place to do what the fund was intended to do.
Representative Leland.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I support this amendment. Representative Broad, I had a bill like this myself a couple of sessions ago, and I think it's a great thing because actually, talking about using it as a cash flow account, you know, in a cash flow account, presumably the money is still there when you need it for its intended purpose. That doesn't trouble me. What troubles me more is that the governor has used this as a slush fund. To avoid raising taxes the honest way. And so I think that taking it away when it's not needed for its intended purpose is actually a fine idea, because then when there's no money, then maybe we have to say, let's do it honestly and not through the shifts, tricks, and gimmicks that Governor Pawlenty likes to use. So I think I'm going to vote yes on that.
Any further discussion? Representative Peterson.
Thank you. I'm trying to read this real quickly. Is this a blink on, blink off? So if there's, you know, if there was a surplus, you would lower the rate, and then the next year, if there wasn't adequate, it would blink on again? Is that the way this is intended? I guess I'm asking a question of the office.
Representative Brown.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Peterson, my understanding of how this is structured is that if there is that surplus, the rate is adjusted downward, and the next year the same evaluation occurs, and so it's an ongoing evaluation of the surplus dollars and what the rate would then be set at. So the answer is yes.
Representative Peterson.
Just to clarify, so it could be raised again. One year it could be down, one year it would be raised, it would be inconsistent, just depending upon the needs of that fund, right? It'd be blink on, blink off. Okay.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Peterson, it would be based on the surpluses in that account, so and based on also the needs, projected needs for the use of those dollars. And so it's essentially the bottom line money. We have the revenue, you have the uses of the revenue or the projected expenditures, and this is essentially just based on that bottom line number, which is the balance of the two. And so, yes, it's kind of a blink on, blink off. It would never increase over what it is today.
but it would certainly lower if the surpluses are more than is needed to fund the cost of the fund or the cost of the care for those folks.
Representative Huntley.
Well, let's, Mr. Chair, look at why that money is there. The money is there because Senator Berglund would not let the governor spend it, and the governor would not let her expand enrollment in Minnesota Care. So it was a standoff. That's why the surplus is there. And I think we ought to remember that there's 7% of the people in this state that don't have health insurance. And this money ought to be used for them.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Huntley essentially covered my point, but until we are really a place where there isn't a lack of coverage for people, especially people in work who don't have coverage, I think this is an irresponsible policy. Thank you.
Representative Broad.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman and Representative Huntley and Murphy. This does nothing to change that policy. Obviously, if we changed policies related to who's covered, the surplus projections would be very different. And so this does nothing to change that. It does nothing to negate the ability for folks to get covered if that's what the legislature deems to do by statute. So what this does is this says if there's too much money, it goes back. And, you know, the money's not there because of Representative or Senator Berglund and Governor Pawlenty. The money's there because people overpaid to the states versus the need that's out there based on current law or based on projections of current law. And so this does nothing to negate the ability to cover more people if that's what the legislature deems to do.
Representative Brown. Any further discussion? Representative Gottwald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, just to Representative Huntley's comment, I mean, if all we're going to do is look at the Health Care Access Fund as a means of either subsidizing one form of coverage or public coverage only, if we're only thinking in that box, then his comment is correct. If we're thinking in terms of the way Representative Broad has offered this amendment, that it goes back and helps with affordability, which goes directly to access, which goes directly to the access issue, then it, in fact, does go for the purpose it's intended, and that's to get more of the 7%, or as we discussed on the Healthcare Access Commission, perhaps somewhat less than 7%, maybe more like 4%. But affordability does go to the issue of access, and I think what Representative Broad has represented is that it could, in fact, help with that.
Any further discussion? All those in favor, signify by aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
No. Representative Brock?
Mr. Chairman, I thought I had asked for a roll call.
No,
okay.
That was a previous amendment. So let's do that again because I wasn't...
Mr. Chairman, if we're going to do it again, I'd like a roll call. I honestly thought I asked for a roll call.
I don't
on
think
that
a
bill.
Roll call was requested. From my understanding and from staff, a roll call is not requested.
I think I did, Mr. Chairman.
And I will rule that the amendment did fail.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I believe I did ask for a roll call. I'm sure the tape that now is on will indicate.
Well,
yeah.
Right. Representative Broad, we can do a roll call. And we'll play the tape back another day.
Yeah, I'd love to hear it because I still want to hear Representative
sure.
Abler.
Mr. Chair,
okay.
He did. He caught it.
Did you?
He caught it.
Okay.
He caught it.
I was informed that
he
didn't have a roll call. So.
I actually wrote it down before she called it.
Okay.
And then she called it right after it.
Okay. We'll do a roll call. I apologize. I was informed that there wasn't a roll call. Okay. So we'll, since the roll call is requested or anticipated to be requested, we will do the roll call.
Huntley.
No.
Abler.
Yes.
Anderson.
Yes.
Broad.
Yes.
Huntley is absent. Dean.
Yep.
Erickson.
Yes.
Fritz.
No.
Gottwald.
Yes.
Harsh.
No.
Liebman.
No. Yeah.
Loeffler.
No.
Murphy.
No.
Otremba.
No.
Pepin is absent. Peterson.
No.
Lude.
No.
Lodge.
No.
Carl.
No.
Peterson.
No.
Marker.
No.
With the same vote as the previous amendment, the amendment fails on a 7 ayes and 12 nays. Amendment is not adopted. The A7 amendment. Does somebody claim the A7 amendment?
Oh, I do.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move the A7 amendment.
Do the amendment.
Mr. Chair, I move the A7 amendment.
Okay, and through the amendment, Representative Erickson.
Mr. Chair and committee, this would take away the nursing home license surcharge that was added in 2003, and it uses healthcare access fund dollars to do that.
Representative Huntley.
Mr. Chair, what year does that money get transferred out of the healthcare access fund?
Mr. Chair, it's 2009.
And that's in this biennium, I understand. Because then it puts the balance out of line with what the Ways and Means Committee asked us to do.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Erickson.
I would move to delete 2009 and insert 2010 on line 2.25.
Mr. Chair, that's a substantive change in the bill, and I think it did not meet the 24-hour rule.
Due to, actually, I due to an amendment that we adopted earlier with Representative Broad's amendment, I think to stay consistent, this has to be ruled in order since it's just changing the year.
And Mr. Chair, on that amendment, there was no dispute over that item, and nobody challenged the ruling at that time. I will challenge this amendment, this rule, or ask you to rule that it's out of order.
The ruling of the chair is being challenged. Discussion on the ruling. Representative.
Mr. Chairman, I think you're right.
Okay, let's clarify what the votes are. A yes vote would be to uphold the ruling of the chair, and a no vote would be to rule the amendment out of order. So Representative Gottman.
Mr. Chair, I guess I would wonder why we didn't question it one time and now we're going to question it. Seems a little inconsistent. I would ask for a roll call.
Representative Beeson.
No.
Representative Hunt.
Do we hold off on this amendment because I think we're looking for something else?
Are you moving to table this amendment?
Just lay it over for about 10 minutes.
Okay. There is a motion to lay over, which I do think takes precedence. Discussion on the motion to lay over. And okay. With none being so, all those in favor, Representative Broad.
The foreshadowing is just too much. The idea of looking for something else, I'm happy with doing it. It's intriguing. And but we are certain to bring this amendment back up. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You could bring it up right now if you want to.
Representative Huntley withdraws his motion to lay the amendment on to lay the amendment over. Representative Huntley.
My understanding on line 214 that this is effective the day following enactment, and that would mean that we would have to appropriate the money on that day.
And can you reference
2.1?
Mm-hmm. With the effective date, that does change, even with the amendment to 2010, does change the fiscal impact, since if we were to pass this immediately, that it would have an immediate impact. So the chair will once again rule the amendment out of order. Discussion. We will move on to the next amendment then. The A13 amendment.
Mr. Chair, I'll
Representative Gottwald, the A13 amendment.
Mr. Chair, I'll be offering the A13 amendment, and I have a technical oral amendment that's important to this amendment that worked this out with Mr. Walls. On line 1.12, we'll change 3.0 to 1.4%. On page 3, we're deleting lines 3.35 through 4.5.
Mr. Chair, to clarify, I'm sorry, Representative Gottwald, we just were handed the 13-1 amendment. Which one are we working off of?
Correct, yep. The 13-1 amendment is what I have in front of me, Mr. Chair.
Okay, we're just getting it. So, not the 13, it's the 13-1? Okay.
Yes.
Representative Gottwald, the A13-1 amendment, two things. One is it did not meet the committee's 24-hour deadline, and two, even though it is a change from the A13 amendment, it's a substantive change. So, as chair, I'm going to have to rule this out of order with the committee's rules. We can take up the A13 amendment, however.
Well, even the A13.
Right? Representative Gottwald.
Mr. Chair, I would protest your ruling or question your ruling. This is the result of our recess during which we were asked, or we'd originally argued to take the time, and I think you spoke to us taking an hour to look at these amendments and see how they could be matched up in light of the targets that were set just 2 hours before our committee met. That is what the 13-1 amendment is. So I would think in light of your comments earlier that this would be allowed, and I worked on it further with John Walls on the percent so that this works out to match up with what we were given 2 hours before committee. So I would ask for some discretion on your part.
Representative Gottwald, I think if you recall when the question was posed to the chair if amendments to amendments would be accepted, I couldn't speculate at that time depending on the substance of those amendments. We have accepted amendments, changing effective dates and things such as that. And I think that wasn't, excessive when it came to the technicalities. But this amendment, I do think, is in a different league and is a different change in front of the committee and did not meet the 24-hour rule, so I will be ruling this out of order. Representative Barad.
Mr. Chairman, I want to go back a week. We had the health care reform bill. Representative Huntley was sitting up there for quite a while again, but going through all sorts of amendments from both sides of the aisle, 20 of which I believe were in play from your side of the aisle. Five of those 20 did not meet deadline based on the number on the top left corner of those amendments. At that point, the discussion was made, or the discussion was held related to, they didn't get printed before the 24-hour, but they were at the revisor's office and meant the spirit of the intent of the 24-hour. And so those five amendments were brought forward and voted on with no protest, no concern. Yet, at that point, then, we brought forward a couple of amendments and were
essentially told that we were off base and did not meet the rulings, and that's fine. But the only thing consistent is the inconsistency in the rulings. And so we either have a 24-hour rule, and it applies to both sides of the aisle, I appreciate what you're trying to do, or we don't. And, you know, I don't know if the 24-hour rule is in place 1 week and not another, but, I mean, the fact of the matter is that that rule has already been violated, not just by us, not by a variety of members, and there was no complaint at that point by the chair related to those amendments. So, Mr. Chairman, I just appeal to your sense of fairness and consistency related to the amendments. This met the spirit of the intent. What happened is that at 2:30, the game changed. And, the whole game plan changed in that all of a sudden the funds were bound. They were fenced off. And so when you have that, you've got to, I think, Mr. Chairman, allow some latitude for the staff to work with us to make some changes to the bills that we met deadline with. We met deadline with our amendments. And the whole thing changed when the Ways and Means Committee voted to fence off those funds. And so all of a sudden at 2:30, our amendments were out of bounds. So I don't know, Mr. Chairman, how that meets the spirit of the 24-hour rule and how that even remotely passes the fairness test. And so I just do appeal to you. This is not a substantive change. The intent of this was to bring forward some things that were already in place with House Research. Mr. Chen did a great job over the weekend and on Monday trying to help us get our things in on time. We really wanted to get them in on time, and then things changed. So, Mr. Chairman, I really, let's just take the vote. I mean, it's about priorities, and let's just, we're just trying to find any way to fund the priorities that we feel that this whole committee on a bipartisan basis feels are priorities. Let's get it done. And, Mr. Chairman, this is not consistency.
Representative Broad, on your point, according to our permanent rule, the Ways and Means Committee has the ability to set targets under 4.03. That is something that this committee does not have influence in nor dictate. And we have to operate under the rules that have been established and which have been voted on by the entire House. It is under those parameters and the rules of the committee in which I make my determination. And I think that's only fair. When you look at the discussion that we had from the last bill about the 24-hour deadline and how that applies, when you look at your amendments and the timestamps, all of them do not technically meet the 24-hour rule with the timestamps on the amendment, but we clarified the intent. If anything changed with the Ways and Means Committee, they changed within the rules that have been established. And that's the ruling in which I have to base my decision. Representative Pell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I think the chair has been pretty consistent and generous. When we look at the original 8:13, it is stamped 3:25, 10:30 this morning. So it's very consistent with last week's ruling, where some of them didn't technically make the deadline, but it was the intention to, or because of the overwork of the staff, that they had to delay this for a while. And so I think the chair has been pretty generous and consistent in that.
Representative Gottwald.
Mr. Chair, I'm not trying to cause trouble here, but I have to object to this in the strongest of terms. These amendments were forwarded to the revisor's office before the deadline yesterday, regardless of what's printed in the corner. Those are the same rules that were operated on in committee just a couple of days ago. They met the spirit in that term, and the rules did change at 2:30 this afternoon, making it impossible for us, unless we can read mine in reverse time, there's no way we could have written these amendments to fit accordingly. And then you came at the time that we took recess for an hour and said, we will take time over this time for you to match these things up and bring them back. You said that that was your intent. This was your ruling as chair. So when we actually do that, working with staff, come back with something that was submitted before 5 o'clock, meeting the 24-hour deadline, something that was meant to come forward in this spirit, but was you know, suddenly not valid because of a decision made by another committee. And that's fine if at the break you had said that's you're still not going to be able to make any changes. But you said this is time for you guys to look this over. We're taking a break. You guys can take some time to look over your amendments. Am I missing something there? So that is what we did. And the result was the 813-1 with the change that I'm offering. It's a change in percentage, and it deletes where some of the money would have come from. You know, frankly, I think this is an amendment some of you would like to vote for. But I do think we need to be consistent here. And this is not consistency, Mr. Chair. Not when we have the change in rules, not when this met the 24-hour guideline, and not when you offered us the chance to rework these over an hour break that we took. But if your intent is to block any of this from being considered, I understand, but I don't think that's your intent.
Representative Gottwell, my intent is not to block this from being considered. We've taken votes on several amendments today already. I also did not make a firm commitment on how I would rule on any amendments to the amendments, and I think I made that abundantly clear when Representative Broad asked me if that would be possible, and I said that I could not speculate since I could not see the amendments. And I want to make that clear yet again. If we want to talk about the 24-hour rule for the basis of my decision, I could also base my decision that your 813-1 amendment takes $5.7 million from the Health Care Access Fund and still goes against the Health Ways and Means Resolution. So my ruling stands that this is out of order. On to the next amendment. One more amendment left. The A-19 amendment, or A-5 amendment, the 19th of the day. The A-5 amendment. It was the 19th amendment. That's why I misspoke. It's a similar amendment to some that we've considered already.
Mr. Chairman, I don't think that needs to be offered. I believe that one's out of order.
Thank you, Representative Brown. With no further amendments before the division to the bill, Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to have a roll call on the bill.
Roll call has been requested. Representative Amos.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Huntley, I understand the work you've done on this bill, we had a bill like this. I think it was 02 or 03, the Senate sent over something, and it didn't really cut a lot, and, like, who couldn't be for that one? And I wasn't sure how I was going to vote when I came in today. I really didn't know, and I didn't even talk to many people about it. I was thinking I could vote for it because of how little my county was impacted and some programs I cared about. But then, during the break, I didn't work on amendments. I just pulled up this copy of the forecast. And I don't know, it's not your job, Mr. Chair, as the chair of a finance committee, is to meet the target that's assigned to you. And you've done your job, I think, very well, and maybe for that reason I should vote for it, because it meets the target. And there's some shifts in there, I think about half of the shifts, which preserve some things, at least for now, hoping against hope that the money's going to materialize. But if you look at the forecast, I just want to remind everybody, that in this biennium, compared to what we were going to do in November to February, we lost $500 million of revenues, $530 million, and that's not a number foreign to any of you. But in the out biennium, receipts are $1.2 billion, almost $1.3 billion short of expectations. In addition to that, cost in those two bienniums, we're $74 million higher in cost in this very department, and $141 million higher in the next one. And I don't know how we're going to manage our way around that. And with that all considered, the planning estimate, not even, I don't know if that includes inflation, we're short $1 billion. I think we didn't buy any education in there. We didn't buy any more nursing home COLAs. I think Representative Liebling was courageous to suggest we should do a tax increase. But I predict that one won't pass, at least into law. And I don't know, and I'm just nervous. And I offered an idea, which was not cooked enough to really offer to make you vote on, about a way to manage this money. But this is all going to come home and roost on us. And I still don't know how I'm going to vote, but I just want to make us all understand that we're sending out a bill that will balance the budget. When we were doing this, and Senator Bergen thinks it was all me that did all the cuts back in 03, and I reminded her that I was a junior member and really wasn't heavily involved in the choices except to rescue a few things. But we're all in this together. This is a product of the House. And the House position is going to be this bill. And I don't know how a bill that has a net, we didn't get the answer to how many cuts in the bill. I think it's like $50 million or something in that range. That cut $60 million out of some hospital payments is going to get us home. And having sat through a $4.5 billion time, and many of you didn't have that time, and some of the things you had to do then, the shifts and the trickeries and all that, and taking money that's one-time money, and how could you do that, and it's just nice to do it when you're in charge. It's convenient, and it just doesn't require any real hard choices. And I don't think it's really hard as a committee to make those hard choices, because we all have things we care a lot about. But I think we have to remember that we're working with a system that's been layered upon layered upon layered for decades. And if you took a first-year graduate MBA and gave them that 3% challenge and said, if you can't manage this budget and serve as many people or more, you don't get to lay off any good employees that are doing their jobs, and you keep within inflation, I know you could do it based upon the Emmer example about the bathroom and all that, and so many examples you've heard about ways we could spend it better. And the county employees you talk to who will wonder why they can't be flexible with their programming. And we don't have a study about that. Maybe I'll work on study language to talk about how we need to look into the third floor to just do something to get us to look at doing things better. Not to be harsh about it, but to be sensible and prudent. And I'm just offering this thought. I hope I'm saying it in a kind way of looking toward resolution. But if we're successful in our reelection campaigns and come back here in 2009, this minus number is very dented by this bill. This department, which of all has the largest growth of any department, and you know, we were just joking about my amendment, the A1 amendment. It's nice it was number A1, because that was kind of cool. I thought it was the best amendment of all, but that it takes away us doing our job. But I think our job is to be prudent and to offer good leadership and to tell people how it's going to be. And if we can't make the cuts to do this, then we have to take Representative Liebling's idea and actually raise taxes. And maybe that's what this is all set up to do, that when we get a governor who would sign a bill, then we'll be so hungry for the money that we'll do that. And I don't know, but that's a long ways away. That's a long ways off. And a lot of challenges and a lot of retrenchments that happened. You know how the county sat through their cuts through that case management. And that was pocket change compared to what we're looking at. You can't even find a number of that small magnitude that would dent this deficit we're facing. So I said only as a lot of us are here willing to help. And, you know, we made some choices that some of you didn't pick today about where to get money. But there are some things we all hold very dear and very important. And those are all going to be at risk come next year. When we come back looking at $1 billion and $2 billion deficits, and we want to actually fund K-12 as an increase and not cut nursing homes and not cut the waivers. And there's a cap in here on waivers. That's the good news. Waivers are really expensive. And, you know, you start freezing. And anyway, so I still set how to vote, Mr. Chair. I have great respect for you and your work. The committee of this committee is so full of people who care about their work. We look at a lot of things. This is a hard committee. The details are numerous, and But I think that the longer we're on here, the more we understand the scope of the matter, and there's been some good collaboration. And I think that somehow to resolve this, be it this year or next, we'll have to forget who's in charge and just solve the problem. And I hope we can do that even yet this year. So I thank Mr. Chair, and you'll see how I vote when I finally decide. Thank you.
Representative Abler, you speak of if we're successful in our re-election campaigns. Was that a pep speech to get us to run for re-election? Or that was the challenge is already met. Representative Broad.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And, Representative Huntley, I can appreciate how difficult this was. The numbers are big, the challenges are many, and the decisions are not easy. But I do think that we leave the table, leave the committee here tonight with an unfortunate budget. If there's any committee in this House, in this body, that should prioritize funding for nursing homes, it's this committee. We should not be leaving that for the Finance Committee or leaving that for a crapshoot on the floor, whether we can get the votes or not. It's this committee. This committee, if we don't show the responsibility or the direction toward our nursing homes, who is going to? Why would the Finance Committee say, we're going to do the work of the Health and Human Service Committee? That's our job. That's our job. And we all talk about, the priority of nursing homes, yet the budget doesn't show it. And Representative Hunley, I absolutely appreciate that you didn't cut them. We don't agree with proposals that have come forward that do so. One of the concerns that I have is how do you go into conference committee with no position on COLA increases and come out of conference committee with anything remotely close to one? So this committee has got to stop pointing fingers tonight and say, you know what, if we couldn't do it tonight, we can't blame the governor, we can't blame the Senate, this is for the House and this committee to fund, and we didn't get it done tonight. So I hope that along the way we can find a way to do that. It is absolutely a bipartisan priority. It's not Republicans, it's not Democrats, it's not Metro, it's not rural. This one crosses all of the spectrums. And, there's ways to do it within the budget that we have, even considering the difficult decisions that are out there. It's a matter of priorities. That's what budgets are. They're not numbers. They're expressions of priorities. And I think that this committee should have, could have, prioritized nursing homes here tonight. And I think it's unfortunate to go into a negotiating standpoint without that and try to sell to the general public that we're still going to try to get that out of a conference committee. It just doesn't wash. I just don't understand how that actually can come to pass. So if we don't come off the House floor with a nursing home COLA increase or a long-term care COLA increase, I think this committee has got to stop pointing fingers and just say, you know what, it didn't happen. And I think that that's definitely the wrong priority for us. And I think the strong agreement on a bipartisan basis.
Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Huntley, I do appreciate a lot of the work that you have done here. It is a very difficult thing to do to bring this budget into line. And just in my brief experience in first term and now second term in minority, it's a very difficult position to have to make these budgets and make it and add up at the end of the line. One thing I think that it does merit pointing out is that the governor takes no joy in cutting budgets either. And I think that when we say that the governor wanted to cut inpatient hospital payments and we had to cut and didn't want to cut, and the governor wanted to cut the waivers and we didn't want to cut the waivers. The governor doesn't want to cut these programs. The governor wants to prioritize these programs. His priority was to keep people who are currently enrolled. And I think that we can argue that that's a good decision or a bad decision, but that's the leadership that he moved forward with. And he takes no glee in trying to trim these budgets. And what Representative Abler said was right on, Mark. We're going to be looking back on these times as the good old days because we're going to be in the soup next time, and these kinds of changes that we're making and tough decisions will be eclipsed. So as we move forward, I think that the decisions that were made in the Ways and Means Committee by locking down this money, fully attributing it to fully expansion, draining the reserve funds, is a risky scheme for settling this budget when we're moving into rocky economic times. And lastly, I'd just like to finish up by talking a little bit about process, because we have disputed the process, and I think that the staff on the committee is not to be blamed for that. You've fallen victim to a schedule that you really don't have any control over with the way that these bills have been rolled out and pushed through the committee process. It doesn't allow for time for the community to come in and to respond from the state, as we would have liked to have done, to have an entire day to have community input on the budget. I think that that's something that we had done in the last term that was a good thing. And the last thing is that this health care budget, any budget, cannot be solved by one party, no matter what the majority is. This has got to be a bipartisan solution. And I think that when we look at procedural decisions that are made that really irritate the minority and the groups that are watching, I think that it hurts in getting to a solution. We need to get to a solution at the end of the day that is both bipartisan and does involve all of the stakeholders from across the state. So I think that we're in for bumpier times ahead, but we'll fasten our seatbelts.
Representative Gottwald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't want to repeat some of the good things that have already been said about the nursing homes. I'm going to vote against this, and for a very clear reason. This is putting off pain. It is expedient to take all the cash flow dollars, or most of them, and to use reserves to kind of keep things hobbling along. But I have talked to people who serve on a budget advisory committee who are projecting we may be in the $3 billion deficit range next biennium. It could get worse than that as the economy worsens. And so all we're doing is putting off the pain till after the election. And that concerns me greatly. You can say what you want to about the governor's budget, but it does less of that, a great deal less of that. If you want to raise taxes, then raise taxes. But raiding funds, set aside funds, to get us through until things get a lot worse is going to cause a lot of pain. I talked to some of the people in our audience here this evening during the break, and some of them acknowledged the same thing. I mean, what's going to happen when we're facing a $3 billion deficit? And these programs and commitments are still there. They've been allowed to continue because of reserves that are now no longer there. What are we going to do then? Does anybody have an answer for that this evening? I don't think so, and it's certainly not reflected in this budget. So I get concerned that it's a frankly responsible approach, and that it leaves that pain for a future legislature. I understand the motivation as well. I don't think I'd want to cut any of these needy programs. I think Representative Dean spoke to the fact that the governor doesn't like to do it. None of us like to do it. But we also have a job to do here, and part of it is being honest about where we're at with the budget. Just a brief comment on process, too. I have talked to so many people in my district, in the chambers, in the Capitol, here in the state office building, and around the state, who have said with one voice, this process is messed up. That the way the clock has been run here and the way that it has done a disservice to public input and the process of enacting legislation in a thoughtful and considerate way is atrocious. I think we saw some more of it here tonight. I think we really need to consider how fast we're moving with some of this and what that is doing to the due process and public input and public understanding of what's being done. These are very critical issues. The things that are passing through this committee are vitally important. And all of you would agree with that. But the way that the clock is being managed right now at the legislature is doing a disservice to Minnesota. And I object to the way the process has been handled.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I just want to respond to a few points here. First of all, Representative Broad, I mean, that was a really nice speech, but you know what? This budget does prioritize long-term care. It does. And if you look at the way this budget works, I mean, this budget keeps the rebasing, it keeps the COLAs that were promised in the last session. The governor's budget does not do that. So this budget really does prioritize those things, even though it doesn't do as much as most of us would like because we don't have any more money. So, I mean, it's just wrong to say that we are not prioritizing long-term care in this budget. Representative Gottwald, you spoke about we shouldn't raid set-aside funds. I don't know what you call raiding the Health Care Access Fund if it isn't that. It seems to me that funds that are reserves and funds that are the cash flow fund, it seems to me that that's an appropriate place to go. And, yeah, you know, if you don't have money in the bank somewhere down the line, you're going to have to figure out at that point what to do. There's no getting around that. But a rainy day fund is for using for a rainy day, and I do think that it is raining. To the other point about the timing, you know, I have to say that I think that we are moving a little more quickly than I would like. I mean, I think all of us have had difficulty even just because the staff can only do so much. We've all had bills that we couldn't even get drafted, things that we weren't able to do this session. But I do seem to remember Representative Seifert on the House floor sometime, I think it was last session, wanting to cut the second year in the cycle and have less time and complaining about that we were just wasting time in session and we should have less of it. And frankly, I didn't at that time think that he was being very sincere in that, but maybe he was. But I think we certainly see that there's value to this process, that this process is one that allows the public to have input, that there are certain things that need to be worked through, and that this does take some time. And I hope that we all bipartisanly can try to carry that message to the public, because I think often the public doesn't understand the value of what we're doing here and just think that we're just here running the meter in some way and maybe not even earning our keep. So, you know, I hope that we can all carry that message that rather than buying into that idea that we should cut back on what we do here, that we need to say there's value and let's give it the time that it does need.
Representative Fowler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To Representative Huntley, Chair Huntley, I'm going to vote for this bill. I think it's a very responsible bill. I think Representative Huntley has worked very hard on this bill. This isn't something that necessarily it came together in a quick period, but it's the culmination of what we've been looking at for months. As far as the House budget resolution, the members of the VFL caucus, we have talked about this and talked about this and talked about this. Where are we going to take money from reserves? Where are we going to take money from the cash account? Where are we going to do shifts? Where we're going to refinance. We knew when we saw the November forecast that things were bad. And we know we're in charge and we were going to have to handle that. We knew when we saw the February forecast that things were worse. And we talked about what we were going to do. But when the governor's budget came out and we saw what he did to human services and what he proposed and how he shifted and he cut and he dismantled and he went after, as he always does and has, whenever we're in the time of budget deficit, those that are most in need. I think the fact that we went from a budget, from the governor proposal, a $523 million cut, almost $524, to a $131,000 million, is amazing that we're able to work with the numbers that way. Times of cutting are never easy, and yes, next year is going to be worse, but you have to do what's responsible. This bill keeps intact the past work we've done, and then it just doesn't maintain the enrollment, which is what the governor does, but we keep the changes that we made last year, the folks that were supposed to be eligible. We keep people enrolled and keep things in place, and we keep the progress going. We have to remember the human services budget and this budget, these are mandated services. These are about people that are needy. These are people in nursing homes. These are not services that are considered extra by any stretch of imagination. And are the prices going up? They're going up. I mean, Representative Abler is right about what's going to happen with the budget.
But can we just cut the areas that we're all getting older that are going to be growing? I think we really have to take a responsible approach. I think that this bill really does that. I think the entire House budget resolution does that. I think we're well positioned for coming out of the budget in a good position this year and going into probably what's going to be a much more difficult year next year. So I'm happy to vote for the bill.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think it's all been said.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I also want to thank Representative Huntley for bringing this forward. While I don't think it's a pain-free budget proposal, it is far better than the one that we got from the governor in that I think it protects those most vulnerable. To the point about putting up the pain and bipartisan support for the work that we do in this committee, I think I've learned something really important this session, and that there are two things, raising revenue and reforming systems, that I think are very hard, much harder than shifting funds from one place to another and calling that prioritization. I actually think that raising revenue and reforming the system is where our future work lies, and it's the hardest that we have to do. Thanks, Representative Huntley.
Representative Huntley.
Well, Mr. Chair and members, I urge you to vote for this bill. This bill, I talk about priorities. Obviously, if you look at this bill, our number one priority was nursing homes and long-term care. In last year's budget, when we got the final amount that the governor would accept in extra money for this committee, 56% of that money went to nursing homes and long-term care. So it was our priority last year, it's our priority this year. I will say, however, that this discussion, a lot of it is apart from the long-term care and nursing homes, where they're not really, that part of the budget does not deal with the real medical care these people are getting. That's a separate item in this budget. And it's quite clear from practically anybody that's looked at this in this country that there's 30 to 40% waste in our health care system. And this country is facing a huge problem. We've got the recession probably now. But if we continue spending twice as much as the rest of the industrialized world on health care, we won't have an economy. And so my pitch is we need to do something about containing these costs and improving quality, which was the purpose of the health transformation bill. And I just have to say it, which the governor has now walked away from. He's not interested in doing health care reform. And the economy of this state and this nation depends on doing health care reform and getting those costs under control.
Thank you, Representative Hunt. Representative Gottwell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have to respond to the final comments. My understanding is the governor objects to the health care reform as proposed. I don't think he said he's not in favor of health care reform. But there are other approaches, and the approach that the task force has brought forward, we spent 5 hours working on the bill here in committee without a single amendment going on, has a great deal of concern for many of the people we represent. So it's not the last story, and I don't believe the governor has walked away. But I do think he has concerns about some of the things that are contained in what's being proposed, and that's part of the process we go through here at the legislature. Nobody questions the need for it or that costs are going up rapidly, but this is a detailed world that we live in, and there are many ways of going about these things. And the discussion will continue, and I'm sure we will get some things done. I certainly hope we do this session, but to cast aspersions and say that people are walking away from things plays well in the media, but it doesn't help us accomplish our ultimate goal of the best health care system possible for Minnesota.
Representative Barrett.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Huntley, you just said that I think I heard you say 56% of new spending last year went to nursing homes. Is that what you said?
Mr. Chair and Representative Erickson, 56% of the new money that we spent in this budget in Health and Human Services last year went to nursing homes and long-term care.
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Huntley, we figured it out to be 5.2% of the new money went to nursing homes. So you need to give us the breakdown so we understand from where you're coming.
Representative Huntley, we will do that. Just to clarify, Representative Abler,
I think it's new money versus forecast.
Any further discussion on the bill? A roll call has been requested.
Huntley.
Yes.
Abler.
Respectfully, no.
Anderson.
No.
Barr.
No.
Ben.
Yes.
Dean.
Nope.
Erickson.
No.
Fritz.
Yes.
Hartwell.
No.
Harsh.
Yes.
Freeburn.
Yes.
Lassiter.
Yes.
Murphy.
Yes.
Latrimba. Turpin is absent. Peterson.
Yes.
Reed.
Yes.
Slowick.
Yes.
Tom.
Yes.
Peterson. Walker.
Yes.
With there being 14 ayes, 6 nays, the bill is passed and referred to the Finance Committee.
As amended.
And we found our second set of minutes, and Representative Powell moves the minutes of March 19th. Any discussion? All those in favor, signify by aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Minutes are adopted, and we are adjourned.